I always forget the words to this song. I love this song, but I can never remember the words to this.
Hey-ha. I think that's it.
Shippa shippa hey-ha?
Feel good. That's a feel good he's saying right there.
Feel good. Feel good.
I'm not sure the lyricist on this did what he was supposed to do. It just sounds like he forgot the words to his own song.
You can do that.
I guess so.
If you have a big catalog to remember, it's
yeah,
tough.
I guess. It makes it easier, doesn't
you know,
it?
You know darn well Mick Jagger is looking off an iPad when he's singing, because how can he keep all those words together?
I think that about almost all bands or entertainers, once they've amassed a large quantity of songs... I know that guy wrote, in some cases, the guy singing it wrote it, but at some point you just go, I've written 140 songs. I can't remember all of them, you know?
They actually make an iPad stand for musicians.
Do they really?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
That's a very good idea.
Because then you can, you know, just flip to the next page of words.
Yeah.
Although it's hard for old people because an iPad isn't big enough.
Right.
I'd need like a, you know, 60-inch TV to give me the lyrics.
Right. My parents went to see Frank Sinatra toward the end of his life. He was performing in Las Vegas, and he, at that point, was literally reading the lyrics to his songs off of index cards. He stood up on stage and sang, but he had a very thick pile of index cards. Shooby dooby, doo. You know, it was all
I
on
wish
index.
I could have fit them all on one.
But still, they said, I said, well, boy, the crowd must have hated that. No, it's Frank Sinatra. You know, and I guess, you know, I wasn't old enough to go, but I would have just to see him even read index cards for an hour and a half. That's fine by me.
I would have rather had him read a story.
Right.
That would have been more exciting.
Good night, moon. That would have been worth the price of admission. Frank Sinatra doing Good Night, Moon. I'm in.
It would have been a short show.
I know. By the way, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the program. A lot of big name celebrity guests on the show today. Colin Jost, who hosts Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live, co-hosts with Michael Che, will be a guest. And Katie Rich, who's a writer for Saturday Night Live, also on the show in the second half.
And an all-around fun girl.
Isn't she fun?
I just love her.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we should ask Colin Jost about the Leslie Jones hitting on him thing. Because it bothers me.
Here, I swear to you, it's funny you say that, because as soon as we had Colin Jost on a year ago, and he's a very nice guy, very funny man. Ever since Kevin suggested we have him back because he's in town performing at Zany's, that's been on my mind. And please explain for people who don't know what we're referring to.
First of all, Colin Jost is fantastic on Weekend Update with Michael Che. They have developed this amazingly great chemistry.
Yeah.
I will admit, it took a little while.
Yeah.
And, you know, it should. Anytime there's a new somebody, it's
an adjustment.
It is an adjustment.
Right.
So they're rocking it and everything. And there's this, anytime Leslie Jones, who is starting to win me over, she's big and loud and scary.
All right.
She's funny.
Yeah.
She won me over when the little guy from Game of Thrones was on.
Peter Dinklage. Yeah. Yeah.
What an appropriate name, I got to tell you.
They
putting the dink in Dinklage.
They did a scene that was Naked Survivor or something like that, where they were without their clothes out in the wilderness.
She's really funny, and I really feel like I want to see the Ghostbusters because I love the trailer. I know people are saying it's not good.
Yeah.
I want to see the new Ghostbusters, and she's winning me over. But there's one point in the Weekend Update that happens almost every time she's on.
Mm-hmm.
If she's on as a character, I don't know that it happens, but if she's on as herself, she starts really hitting on him in a very strongly sexual way.
Very aggressively.
I would hit that.
Right. And I always, as I'm watching it, I think if the roles were reversed and if it was a female update anchor, as it's been in the past with Amy Poehler or Tina Fey, and there was one of the cast members, one of the guys on there being very blatant about having sex with them, it would be extremely uncomfortable. So why is it okay to reverse those roles and have a woman hitting on a guy so consistently?
I just...
And aggressively.
I don't get it. And it's not funny.
I get very... It's one of the few things on the show that makes me cringe a little bit. And I like him a lot. I really do. But I think to myself, that's that really would not play well at all. If there, and I guess his argument would be if we ask him that, I'm going to let you ask him that.
No,
I'm going to cower
you
in the corner. I'm just going to whimper in the corner while you ask him. I know what they're doing is they're saying, look, we've switched the roles. Isn't that funny? But it makes me nervous.
It's not funny. And then she gets pigeonholed into being like some kind of nymph. Oh,
right.
I guess nympho
is more
accurate
here. But if I don't know if you've ever seen her stand up, a lot of her stand up is that. And now that's her persona. She's in commercials now and she's kind of doing that. There's some commercial for something where her car needs it to be towed or her wheel needs to be changed. I don't know what it is. I'm afraid sometimes. She's so in your face. But I don't know. I guess we can ask him that question. I don't want to upset him, but it's a legitimate question, right?
Here's how I will phrase it. And maybe he's listening on his way in. I don't know.
Maybe.
I want to know if it started as an inside joke and now they just do it to amuse each other.
That's a good way to ask it.
Because.
That's a very good way to ask it.
Because his reactions are funny.
Right.
But the first, I don't know, 12 times maybe, but it's just every time she's on. And I don't understand.
Does it make you, because like I said, it makes me uncomfortable to watch it. It makes you uncomfortable too.
Yeah, because I watch with my teenage boys and it's just, I don't know. I know women are out there to show that women can enjoy sex too. Duh.
We're
sex
all
is
for
fun.
That. Everyone's for that.
But it's so in your face.
Right. And there have been, over the years, there have been so many things on that show.
Worse.
Where I read about, oh, people have said, that's it, I'm never watching the show again. That was the worst thing I've ever seen. I still remember Dana Carvey in a scene called Massive Head Wound Harry that I thought was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I remember people just up in arms at how grotesque it was.
It was.
A guy at a party who kept injuring himself and he had blood spurting out of his head through the whole scene. I thought it was hysterical, but everyone's like, that, they have gone way too far this time. So I could watch that.
This is different. This is just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm a prude. Maybe that's it.
Maybe. All right. We need to take a quick break. We have a lot coming up on today's show. If you want to jump in at any point, 312-981-7200 is the best way to play it. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Isn't that a funny word to say?
I can't remember the last time I said ophthalmologists before today, but now I'm going to say it a lot today just to make up for lost time.
Is that the magic word?
Today's magic word is ophthalmologists.
Ding! The little ducky came down.
Think about how simple life was in the 1950s, where that would thrill an audience, that you could say a word, and it was the magic word, and then a duck would come down, and you would win $100. That was a simpler time, and I miss those days.
Bill, I totally do, too.
Don't you? Wouldn't it be nice? I don't know how we would rig it here in the studio. There must be some way, but we make one of the ceiling tiles. We rig something up so when a guest says a specific word, a duck will just come down and then we will hand them a check for $100. I think that would be great. Is there a way to do that?
I don't know. I would like to get Peter Dinklage in one of those tiles. And
well,
they
now
could...
you're running up the price on it because he's going to charge a little bit. He's got network star power.
I got Dinklage on the brain.
You need to see an ophthalmologist. That's what you need
That's
to see.
That's why I got the Blue Cross Blue Shield
right.
app.
They'll cover it. You got a copay, but it's still worth it. Come on, are you kidding me? You know what I was wondering, and you're a good person to ask because you're sitting right over there. This guy Chris Murphy from Connecticut did what they call a filibuster, and I remember when I was in history class in grade school, they taught us about filibusters.
But I didn't remember much about it other than the name.
I swear to you, that's exactly what I was going to say. I remembered the name because it's a funny word.
Yep.
And I remembered the concept, which is you just keep talking, right? You go up there and you just don't stop talking. But I don't know what the rules of filibustering are. Now, what he was saying is a very, very important message. It was about gun control and the need for the Senate to finally do something, to stop saying they're going to do something and do something. And that's an extremely important message.
Yep.
But I wonder exactly, I don't know the rules of it, because I was trying to think, like, do you just go until you can't go anymore? Or what if...
Don't we do that every day?
Well, no, because the Wintrust business lunch comes in,
yes.
And Steve comes in, and, you know, so we must stop at noon, and then Rose Show starts, so we must stop there. But are you allowed to take a bathroom break? What if you pass out? Can somebody spell you? Like at some point, can somebody tap you? Is it like a tag team filibuster?
Yeah, they were splitting off yesterday.
They were doing that.
Dick Durbin spoke for a while and talked about violence in Chicago. And yeah.
And Steve, is the time limit not there? I mean, can you just go, like if you wanted to go for a month, could you go for a month?
Yeah, I mean, didn't you see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington or Mr. Cruz Shuts Down the Government?
Years ago. Well, he was just reading Dr. Seuss when Ted Cruz did it. He was reading Dr. Seuss.
I'm not a parliamentarian, but if they have control of the floor, you know, they can maintain that at certain times, and that's what they did yesterday.
Do you have to request a filibuster? Do you just show up and do it?
I don't know. I don't know any of that.
It has to come during a certain moment, you know, like when you should get an expert on, because I'm not as...
Isn't that funny, though, how I'm sorry, and Steve, you are very smart, and Bill, you are pretty smart.
That's the weirdest compliment I've ever been paid.
I am so unengaged and in tune with governmental policies and anything political. I hear it, I tune out. So I understand that. I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of surprised you guys don't.
But it's for me, it was either sixth grade or seventh grade where this came up in history class. And I remember our teacher explaining it doesn't happen often, but the goal is to just, you know, get your point across and take as long as you want and everything like that. And I thought, well, all right, if it ever comes up in life, now I know, but now it has come up in life. And again, I'm 100% for this. I just wonder what the effectiveness is of saying to your coworkers, I'm just going to talk and talk and talk till I can't talk anymore. Does it work? Does it not? I don't know.
Ask Jimmy Mack, because that's kind of what happens.
Is that what happens
house?
At the house?
I think I filibuster him all the time. And they are using it as a word because Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut filibustered
without
for nearly 15 hours to push gun control legislation.
Yeah. So, Steve, do you know how much of that 15 hours he, because as you pointed out, others came in and took a part in this. So how much of that 15 hours do we know was actually him?
I don't know the answer to that, Bill. All right. I'm sorry.
Who's That's a filibuster right. expert? Filibuster? Don't even know her. That's probably what I said in high school when it came up.
Right. Wendy, your thoughts on the filibuster? Well, I barely know her. Rimshot, somebody. Where is it? Nobody.
We need a rimshot, by the way. Who would be a filibuster expert? Because I need to find out about this.
I don't know. I have no idea. The nonstop series of speeches last night stretched 14 hours and 50 minutes. It followed the shooting massacre at a gay nightclub in Orlando. I've had enough. I've had enough of this ongoing slaughter of innocents, and I've had enough of the inaction of this body. This is according to Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut. He said all this during his filibuster, which he started at 11:21 a.m. on Wednesday. He vowed to remain on the Senate floor until we get some signal, some sign that we can come together. Now, when I hear that, and I already knew this part, I've seen this on the news, I'm 100%, there's no part of this I'm not for.
It
is time to stop talking about it and do something. So kudos to him for having the guts to say this and do this. But so what happens next? He spoke for 15 hours. Where do we go from here?
Well, he says that he's won assurances, the senators, the Democrats have won assurances that there will be votes on a couple of things. One is the gun show loophole, you know, in the internet sales where there's a lesser background check. And the other is that people who are on the no-fly zone wouldn't be able to buy a gun, which, you know, again, you can love or loathe Hillary Clinton, but I think she put it most succinctly when you and I can't fly on an airplane with more than 4 ounces of shampoo,
right?
But someone who's declared too dangerous to fly an airplane can go buy a gun.
How does that happen? And I'm going to ask the dumbest question ever, so go ahead, get your texts ready. Why are there automatic weapons for sale? Honestly, I'm very naive. I'll admit it. I'm ignorant of this. Who needs that type of gun?
Well, that's one of, if not the biggest issue in all this, is people trying to determine exactly that.
Because don't you kind of assume that if someone's purchasing a semi-automatic weapon, that they're going to use it for bad things?
Well, one of the things the proponents say is that there are a lot of people who are in competitions and target practice and use those weapons.
Doesn't it take the sport out of it?
Well, I mean, you know, personally, my response to that is, well, we don't allow rocket-propelled grenades for target practice,
right,
or we don't allow hand grenade practice, so we have to draw the line somewhere. Just because you want to do target practice with it doesn't mean that we should allow it. Now, that's the opposing view. That's my view, which has not prevailed yet.
Well, it makes perfect sense. And I know it's fun to have, they have all these new Nerf guns that shoot little Nerf darts really quickly. And yeah, that is more fun than the single shooter,
I would think.
But they're Nerf guns.
It's so tough because I know people get mad and they go, hey, read the Constitution. Read what the Constitution says. We're allowed to have these.
Were semi-automatic weapons and automatic weapons around then?
No.
Weren't they more for muskets and rifles?
Yeah, back then.
I guess pistols, too.
Yeah, right. So I know that people get all wound up saying, how can you go against the Constitution? It says it right there. We're Americans. We're allowed to have these weapons if we want them. I guess if that's your argument, okay. But if there was something, you know, the sports that I love, you know, so if somebody said all these innocent people keep getting killed because of ping pong, I'd go, well, then you should take my ping pong paddle away. If innocent people are getting killed on a daily basis because of tennis rackets or Nerf balls or whatever, then I'll find something else. I don't know why people won't let go of that. We've proved as a society we can't survive properly with weapons, so do something about it. Why is everybody so adamant? No, it's a good thing. We got to have these automatic. No, it's not. We keep proving every single day our society can't handle them.
And I got to throw another question out there, and then we're going to take a break, and people want to talk about this. So maybe I need to learn about this. I'm telling you right now, I'm ignorant about guns. I'm scared of guns, don't want guns. But I'm not even going to get into it because I'm going to start a whole other argument about things. But I just don't understand why automatic weapons or semi-automatic. I don't even really know the difference, but we're going to find out about it after news. How does
that
sound?
Yeah. Jump in if you like. We'd love to hear from you. And just so you know, the show that Wendy and I do is different. We're not going to yell at you.
No.
And we hope you won't yell at us.
We're trying to learn something.
Yeah. Yeah. 312-981-7200. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Do semi-automatic weapons or automatic weapons get warm after shooting? I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, sure.
I know nothing.
We're trying, this all stemmed from Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut filibustering for 15 hours about, he's trying to get them to finally do something about guns. Everybody says, and this is true, every time there's a shooting, everybody gets all wound up about it for 3, maybe 4 days. And then magically it just disappears and we started square one again. He says it's time for the Senate to finally do something, pass a bill or two, make these harder to get. And you asked some very valid questions.
I feel a lot of people think it's a stupid question, but I am ignorant on the whole gun subject. And who needs an automatic weapon?
That's a legit question. I don't think that's a dumb question. I think that's a legit question.
All right, Pat, we'll start with you. And what's the difference between an automatic weapon and a semi-automatic weapon?
A semi-automatic weapon, each time you pull the trigger, one bullet comes out of the muzzle. You can shoot one bullet. You can still shoot them very fast. You could probably shoot a magazine of 30 rounds off in less than 10 seconds.
Jeez.
An automatic, yeah, a lot of bullets. A fully automatic weapon, which is illegal for Americans to buy unless you have a federal license. Usually only gun dealers have those, but if you pull the trigger once, bullets just keep flying until there's no more bullets.
Who uses those? The military?
The military really is the only people that need to use those.
But they are on the streets, right? People do have them.
You know, fully automatic weapons, really, no.
No?
Those cost at least $10,000. They're very expensive. Semi-automatic weapons are everywhere because you can get them for as little as $500, even less.
And who uses those typically besides people who want to shoot somebody?
I can tell you how I use them.
How many do you have, Pat?
I have 2 semi-automatic weapons. One of them I have is a World War II vintage. It's an M1 rifle. And it holds 8 rounds is all it holds. But still, one trigger pull, one round flies out. You can shoot 8 rounds in a really quick amount of time, 3-4 seconds tops.
And what do you shoot at? I mean, I can tell if you're a gun collector, that's a pretty cool thing to have, although I would take the ammunition out of it and hang it on my wall or something. But what do you shoot?
And I can speak, of course, only for myself, but I thought this may help. I have a military background. I was in the military. I was a paratrooper. I was in the 82nd Airborne Division. So there's the military background where you're first exposed to that type of weapon. And understand, of course, now you've got a lot of vets out there that have experience with automatic and semi-automatic weapons. I have them now, not because I need them, but because it's, believe it or not, it's a hobby.
I can understand that. Do you shoot them at things?
I do shoot them, but all I shoot them at is paper targets. And in Illinois, for people who have them as a hobby, kind of a problem for gun ranges, of course, because there just aren't many. It's not really safe in most places in Illinois to go outside and shoot firearms, especially, of course, the closer you get to the city. I'm out here in Sycamore, so it's not as urban as it is there.
Right.
And I shoot just a paper. I have what they call a Dragunov, which is a Russian sniper rifle. Holds 8 rounds, but still, you can shoot it very quickly. First off, I agree. There are way too many people that have this kind of weapon. And you can see it, really. Every time I go to the firing range, you get doofuses out there who have a lot of money who will go out and buy an AR-15 type rifle because they like to make noise.
Okay, so that's kind of what Bill was speaking of earlier then. If you own it, you say you're very responsible with it, but you see people who shouldn't have it. So would you support banning it even though you have it responsibly?
Yeah, would you be willing to give yours up?
You know, and that's a hard question. It's something I talk to my wife about all the time. I can't say I support banning it, but I definitely support making it much harder to obtain them. I mean, I see complete fools out there on a firing range, and they've got, you know, all it takes is $1,000, and you've got one of these in your hands. A basic background test. Everybody has to do a background test.
How did you obtain yours? Did you have to go, I mean, how did you buy yours? Do you just go buy one? What do you have to do to get one?
I bought it online, and here's one of the myths they have about online. You still have to do a background check online, because if you buy one of these from an online retailer, they cannot ship it directly to you. They have to ship it to a gun dealer, and that gun dealer where you go to receive that, it's shipped to them. You pay the local gun dealer. They do a background check on you.
That makes me feel a little better because you're thinking, you know, oh, kids are going online and ordering a gun. So that makes me feel better that there is some kind of...
Yeah, because it has to be shipped to somebody that has what they call an FFL, a federal firearms license, and that's where your gun dealer comes in. So you do still do a background check.
And, Pat, ammunition is plentiful. You can get ammunition pretty easily.
You know, it's funny. Ammunition, I think, really is the key to gun control. If you talk about banning assault weapons, that horse is really out of the barn. You've got millions and millions of these already possessed by people. I mean, we've got enough automatic weapons in this country to last 500 years.
Yeah.
If you want to really control it, control the ammunition. Ammunition can be really hard to get, especially for specialty-type weapons. Regularly, there's shortages. After Sandy Hook, there was a huge shortage of ammunition because people went out and hoarded it, believe it or not. And it was hard to get.
And do people make their own? You can make your own, too, can't you?
Yeah, my brother's in law enforcement, so he uses it, of course, for his job. But he reloads. He's probably got 5,000 rounds of ammunition at his house.
Do you guys have kids?
I don't have kids.
Does your brother?
My brother has a 16-year-old girl, and he keeps all of his guns, even...
Pointed at her prospective boyfriends. Kidding.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue, but...
But, Pat, when you hear that number, and you're a gun enthusiast, and you're a collector, and you've been around them, when you hear of somebody, just some phantom person, you don't know anything else about them other than the fact that they have 1,500 rounds of ammunition, what thought comes into your head?
That's frightening. It's really frightening. You know, and I spent a lot of time living in Las Vegas. Out west, guns are really a different story. Guns, you think guns are plentiful out here, go west of the Mississippi, outside of California, guns are everywhere. I carried a gun openly in Wyoming, and it was by law, you could do it. Here, I got my CCW, I got a license to carry a concealed weapon, so I carry a weapon with me all the time. And that's different from a hobby. I got it because of these shootings, because I told my family that, you know, if I go to the movies, I'm not going to be one of those guys cowering behind a seat waiting for someone to blow my head off. I want to carry concealed. My mom, after shootings, was afraid to leave our house.
But, Pat, let me ask you something. So if you're at Sandy Hook or you're at the movie theater in Colorado and you see a gunman shooting and you can just pull your pistol out or whatever gun you're carrying, do you think you could take that guy out? Don't you think that what if 10
I have no doubt about it.
But what if 10 other people pull their guns out and then are people going to get killed in the crossfire? It's not the old West anymore.
No, and I agree with you completely. Even people who go through CCW classes, you know, you have to, of course,
and that's concealed carry.
But it's a mindset. I've undergone military training. It wouldn't be the first life I've taken with a gun. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different environment. One, you don't want to create a vigilante environment.
Right.
You know, you don't, like you said, you don't want to have 50 people drawing down guns in a movie theater.
So what do you say? Like, if you're in the outfield, you go, I got this. I mean, how do you know not 10 or 20 people are going to pull out their weapons at the same time?
You don't. You just don't know.
That scares me more.
I agree. It is scary. But on the other hand, I'm going to protect my family, too. And if you were trained, if you're a professional, you identify your target before you start shooting at things. But you've got too many people out there that aren't trained. You got too many people out there that carry a gun because it's cool. You got too many people out there who buy AR-15s because it's cool. They don't learn how to shoot. They don't value what they have. And they don't, you know, it's like driving a car. I get so frustrated because people don't realize they're driving 3,000 pounds of steel that will kill you in a heartbeat. Well, multiply that by 1,000, and that's what you've got with a gun.
But see, that's the whole part of this world is you have to trust somebody. You know, teaching my 16-year-old son to drive, it's like you have to trust the driver next to you that they're going to stay in the lane. You have to trust someone next to you that they're not going to shoot you.
I agree. I agree completely. I mean, I am all in favor of gun control if we put it out there. And I hesitate to say I don't want to lose my right to carry the gun. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I have never used my gun illegally. I have no intention to, but that doesn't mean the person standing next to me doesn't have that intention. The problem I think they're having in Congress is that they have to find a way to do this legally, and I think they don't explain that very well, and people don't understand it, that even though common sense says you can't buy an AR-15, they have to find a way to make that law coincide with the existing law, which sounds silly, but it's harder than it looks on the surface.
You have taught us so much, Pat, but we have to run. I really appreciate. Didn't you learn
a
lot?
Yeah, absolutely. Very rational thoughts, Pat. Well, thank you so much. We do appreciate it. All right.
And we'll continue. We have other people on hold. Shall we take a break and come back?
Yeah, stay on hold. We'll get to more in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Janie's got a gun. I don't know if it's, we found out automatic weapons are not legal to possess or to purchase, and they're very expensive, but semi-automatic weapons are still pretty frightening.
Sure. Yeah.
I mentioned something about trusting someone who's driving next to you. You have to trust that someone next to you on the street is not going to pull out a gun and shoot you. Lance, you have taken issue with that comparison.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think your last caller had some great comments. But I'm going to kind of flip this around and say, you know, with the problem we have in this country with driving under the influence and people shouldn't be driving when they're drinking. Well, they do. So it would come out and be like the government with this gun control coming out saying, we're going to stop making cars because people are making awful decisions drinking alcohol.
But Lance, few people's goal when they're having a bad day is to get in a car and take out people. Nobody gets in the car hoping that that's the end result, but you keep having instances all over the country where people's goal is to kill somebody.
These aren't stable individuals. So it's not the gun. You could come to my house and I could lay my guns on the table and I'll guarantee you they could sit there for a year and nothing's going to happen. happen. And I heard a comment saying, do you have kids in the house? Well, yeah, if you train your kids, be like riding a bike. Do you have a bicycle in the garage if you have kids? Well, you train them. You teach them to ride a bike so they're not scared to get on a bike and fall over. The same with guns. You teach your kids the safe and appropriate way to handle a gun, to shoot a gun, to disarm a gun. So if you train your children to be properly trained to do those things, there's not a problem.
And I agree with you, and I do know that law-abiding gun owners do teach their children to respect it. It's a weapon, and to talk about it. But I don't know if you've looked recently in the news. There are so many reports of toddlers shooting people. A toddler isn't going to comprehend what you are trying to explain to them.
Yeah, I understand that. Chicago's got some of the toughest gun laws in the country.
Then how are we having all these shootings?
Because these people aren't going through the right channels to buy guns. These people are thugs buying guns that are stolen. They're buying guns from the black market. They're not going through the proper channels. These shootings in Chicago aren't from law-abiding citizens. These are from the people that can't get guns, so they're stealing them. They're robbing people.
And also, I've heard political figures, and I'm not going to name names because I'm not sure if that's who said it, but there seems to be a direct link to Indiana and gun shops there that are selling a lot of the weapons that come here. If we are aware of it, why aren't those gun shops shut down?
Who's we?
Well, they're selling the guns legally, Wendy. That's
oh, they
why.
Are they're, selling the guns
in
legally.
In many cases, they're selling them to maybe some people who are straw purchasers who are then
buying
selling
for someone
them.
Else. Right. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So when I buy a gun, I can't just go and order a gun just like your last caller said online, and they're going to ship it to me. They're going to do a background check. They're going to hold. If I go to a gun store, they're going to wait 3 days to do a background check on me.
And that's what the caller said. It's not like they're delivering the gun to his house. He specified it goes to a gun shop.
No. So there's a lot of misconceptions on buying a gun and purchasing a gun. A gun is a right for us to have with this Constitution.
But and you mentioned the Constitution, and this is totally probably stupid of me to bring up, but the Constitution says you have the right to bear arms. Now the laws say it's legal to have an abortion. If people want the rules changed so abortion is illegal, why can't the laws be changed that guns are illegal?
I'm not calling and talking about abortion. I'm talking about gun control.
But it's your right, and it says it in the Constitution, but I'm saying the Constitution is wants to be changed for certain things and not others. I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just throwing that out there because that's what I don't get.
Our country, when it was founded by our forefathers, they said to right to bear arms.
But, Lance, they weren't imagining the type of weaponry that's available today when they wrote that.
It shouldn't be amended?
It's not the guns that are the problem. I don't know why people have such a hard time dealing with that. It's the person behind the gun.
Okay, but if the person behind the gun in the nightclub on Saturday night, Sunday morning had a weapon that fired many fewer bullets and much more slowly, the situation would have been different,
and
right?
He obtained so those it's guns a, legally
so
too.
So it's the same person but a different weapon.
If you would have had somebody in there with a concealed carry, I'll guarantee you the numbers would have been drastically lower.
How can you guarantee that?
Because somebody that's trained to in self-defense and to take defensive tactics and maneuvers inside a club like that, they're going to get themselves in a position to take out the target. Plain and simple. There's classes all across any gun shop, any place where you can go and fire your weapons and in an indoor facility or outdoor facility teaches tactical classes, how to protect yourself, how to get in defensive
What if somebody
maneuvers.
Carrying a weapon and has it concealed is not trained and then shoots you and you can't take out the guy? You just keep going. These guns just keep shooting people.
I'm going to get in a position to where I will take out the target, just like your last caller said.
Yeah.
He's confident. So when you're driving your vehicle down the road, are you confident that you can keep it in your lane of traffic? Yeah, you are. You're confident that you can put your turn signal on, get to the next lane, get to your exit. Just like a gun owner and a responsible gun owner is confident that they're going to be able to take out that target. It's that easy. If you, I don't know, I mean, if you two grew up in a city and weren't ever around in a rural area where guns are, you hunt with them, you clean them, you're taught how to use them. It's not a scary thing.
Well, the key, as you're kind of saying, is education and to be a responsible gun owner. And Lance, we appreciate your views on this. It was interesting hearing different sides of the story, and that's what we're here for. So thank you so
much. Thanks, Lance.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. All right. Thanks, everybody, for participating.
And we're back to where we were.
Well, yeah.
I just don't get it.
I know that everybody's opinion on this varies greatly. You know, there's some people extreme to the left. There's some people extreme to the right. I don't know how you solve this. Nobody knows how you solve this. This is the reason why it's been such a debate for such a long time.
That's why they had a filibuster.
That's why.
And we still don't know how to solve it, and we don't even really know what a filibuster is. So we'll figure that out by the end of the day, right?
At some point we will. Yeah. All right. A break. Steve with the news. Colin Jost from Saturday Night Live coming up in a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's the Bill and Wendy Show, featuring the music of Denny Terrio's Dance Party.
I love your moves, Bill.
Thank you very much.
The pointy finger going up, then to your left hip, then back up.
Can I tell you what the hardest part is making the carpet glow different colors depending on where I'm dancing. That's the hardest part.
That was great.
Yeah.
And Saturday Night Fever was the same thing, where he walked on the tile dance floor and it lit up as he stepped on it.
Brightly colored tiles. Yeah, that's if you're putting a disco together, and why wouldn't you? That's the first thing you want to invest in is colorful tiles for the floor.
Hey, look who just walked in our discotheque.
One of our celebrity friends, Colin Jost from Saturday Night Live, just stopped in.
Here?
Have a seat. Yeah, that's your seat.
I'm always just walking by your guys' window, you know?
We saw you out
check
there.
In. Now
we
see you. Remember I passed here one day after, I feel like it was after I had been on.
Right.
Just wandering by. It's what right. A great spot you guys are in.
We actually took up a collection for you. We thought things were hard, and we raised almost $9 for you, Colin.
Oh, that's great.
It is pretty good.
That's like a little Kickstarter account
for
me?
Yeah, $9.
Thank you to those nine people.
It was nine.
Each. Oh, no, it was more.
It was nine people who each gave a dollar.
Yeah.
This was a precursor to the Bernie Sanders campaign where he really ran with it.
He was really actually looking for $9 for soup. For soup money.
This has got, for people who don't know, those are my daughters, Colin. Big
hi,
fans
daughters.
Of you. One of them is a big fan of yours. The other is indifferent.
The other's on the fence.
But don't tell
the
them which one.
The other is make or break based on this interview.
Right. Yeah. Right. For people who don't know, Colin is one of the update anchors over at Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live, along with Michael Che. This has got to have been, this year, a godsend for you guys. With everything going on politically, you couldn't ask for more.
It's pretty fun. Whether it's good for America or not, I don't know, but it's very good for
not.
My job, and that's all I care about. I'll be very selfish when it comes to that. You know, I got to protect my job.
Right.
So if America ends up, you know, we'll see how this goes, but I got to vote for comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I got to put comedy first.
We should all vote for comedy. I'll know,
right?
Then Trump's going to win.
When I did stand-up, I always wanted the goofiest candidate to win because it meant more material. But this time around, it's a lot spookier.
It's a little spookier. Yeah, it doesn't feel like, yeah, let's have George W. Bush again. That's fun.
Right.
It's different. It's a different kind of vibe, you know?
And Larry David being his Bernie Sanders on the show, is he fun to have hanging out a lot?
Oh, my God. So fun. I think he's in such a good, he's such a good place in life right now because he's having fun and he's getting to go back to SNL and perform. You know, like, he doesn't have the stress of being a writer there like he was back in the day. He
right.
gets to come back as like a champion, you know?
But
as
you know
one
what's
of the
weird
most
about
successful
that?
Writers of all time, you know?
And you already know this. His tenure there was a little troubled.
Oh, yeah,
He had a very tough time as a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So you would think in his head, why would I go back and help those people?
Well,
but
I think
does.
It's because it's satisfying to go back to a place where you feel like you didn't quite succeed and to come back.
And they
and
need
then be
you.
Like, look at, yeah, I know. You're like, oh, look at this.
Who's
it's
needing
cool.
who now?
But I think it was the period he was there for a couple years when Lauren wasn't. So I think he doesn't have any like beef
right.
with Lauren. You
what
know,
do they
I think
call
it was other
the
people
dark
were
years?
In there. The dark years.
Those were the dark years.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it true that when you were in school, not only on the debate team, but you would act out scenes from Saturday Night Live? That was part of your thing when you were in school,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it was funny hearing, you know, I heard David Spade give an interview, and he said he used to, when he was a kid, he used to reenact like Dan Aykroyd and you know, John Belushi sketches.
Yeah.
And I remember doing reenacting David Spade and Chris Farley sketches.
Really?
It was like, I was like, wow, that is a real cyclical thing.
Who do you think is in their little bathroom doing impersonations of you and Michael Che now?
God, I don't know. Well, hopefully... you know, hopefully it's tasteful blackface if someone's doing it.
Hopefully.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I hope. But no, it's, I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting. We'll have to listen into interviews, whatever, in 20
I can't
years.
Wait. Your chemistry is amazing. I love the little back and forth you guys do where you zing each other. It is so funny.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a fun year. He's the best. I really love. I love working with Michael. It's just hanging out with him is the best. You know, he's one of the people I think is funniest in the world, and so being around and working with him is good.
Did you guys know each other prior to being on Saturday Night Live together?
Yeah, from stand-up. Yeah, from stand-up. And I brought him in as a writer at SNL because I thought he was just really funny, and then I had no idea that at some point we'd be doing this together, so it's pretty cool.
Take us back to the first time you hear your name in the credits. You know, they do the opening credits.
Yeah.
It was Don Pardo for a while. He's no longer with us, so now it's Daryl Hannah.
I realized, I think I was the last new cast member to have their name read by Don Pardo.
Wow.
Some weird trivia
from
my bio. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is a real honor.
So you're backstage and you hear that opening credits with your name in there. How fast is your heart beating?
It's nuts. I mean, honestly, the first time, I may have even missed it the first time because so much is happening. You know, you're running around. Like, occasionally now, I'll just hear it. Like, I'll be walking by at the right moment, and I'll just hear Colin, and I'm like, wow, yeah, I'm here. It's so weird. Some things at our show, things happen so fast that you don't even realize they're coming. You know, you'll be reading cue cards and you'll miss a musical guest or something.
Right.
Or you'll walk out and it's just like Paul McCartney's playing, you know, and you're like, wow, what a weird job I work at.
It's the best.
Yeah. I know. The reason we have you here is you're appearing at Zany's. The Zany's.
You
Inn.
Said you had me just for fun.
We're having you just for fun, but as a byproduct of this. The people at Zany's thought, you're here, we might as well throw them on stage.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous to use that up. Chicago tonight at Zany's, one show tonight, two shows tomorrow night, two shows Saturday night.
And we added a third Saturday night because they're all selling out,
they're
which is
working
great.
They're working you like a dog, Colin.
I know.
You can't do this.
I'm like, yeah, I'll do another show. And then I realize I got to speak for like 3 hours on Saturday night.
Filibuster.
It's
the thing
more
to do
my
right
usual
now.
Is like 10 minutes. Filibuster. Exactly.
True.
I got to start reading Dr. Seuss.
People love that.
Ted Cruz.
Everyone
loves Ted Cruz.
You can't go wrong with that. Chicago.zanies.com has all your information. Colin has his own website, colinjost.com. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Colin Jost is here, Weekend Update co-host, along with his friend Michael Che. He's appearing at Zany's tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. Shows are being added as we speak, Colin.
Yeah, it's
just
exciting.
Sold 5 shows now on Friday, 8 shows on Saturday. I don't know if you're going to be able to pull this off.
I mean, you joke, but I wouldn't put it past these Zany's crew.
They're a shady bunch.
It's a shady operation, you know? I've literally never gotten a paycheck. It's
not
crazy.
Once.
Not
they
once.
Promise you money
yeah,
and don't
and
deliver.
Like, yeah, we'll get it. It's like a real they say layaway, which I feel like doesn't work that way.
No, it's not.
Layaway's back.
I think it's like, they're like, yeah, we'll give you a pension, we'll set you up, but I'm worried.
No reason to worry. I'm sure it'll all pan out.
I'm sure. You got to trust.
Yeah, you
always
have to
trust a club owner.
Right. It's show business.
Exactly.
You'll be
it's
fine.
Show business. When has anyone screwed anyone in show business?
Not existent.
All right, yeah. I have a question. We discussed this earlier.
Uh-huh.
Before you came in, and I drew the short straw, so I have to ask you this question.
Okay, great.
Leslie Jones,
yeah,
is hot for you.
There's a, you know, we have a real a blossoming relationship.
It's subtle,
but it's subtle.
There.
You wouldn't notice.
You
at
wouldn't,
first.
Right?
So if you just casually watch, you wouldn't see it.
Right.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
Did that start as like kind of an inside joke between you two, and now it happens every time she's on?
It started as an outside joke. It was a very verbal outside joke.
I mean, oh, really?
Meaning the sense that she would just openly say that, you know, to me.
I want
to
do you.
In real life, she would say that
to you. Yeah, there's nothing like scripted or
that's
about
not a bit.
That.
She wants you.
Well, or at least is putting it out there. You know, she's making her
she's hoping
she's
you put it out there.
Exactly. She's making her intentions known. She's the best. I'm just like, what a wonderful. She's like, it also just being out there and fully, you know, like, it's like almost physically grabbing me sometimes.
I know,
like
your reactions are priceless.
I'm like holding on for dear life. My reactions are all very genuine.
No
there's
acting.
There's zero
it's
acting
all real.
Involved. It's just like you're dealing. And she makes me laugh so much. She's just, her opinions on things.
Yeah.
you know, she was just like going off the other day about how much she hates rescue dogs. Like, Leslie, what are you talking about?
You can't hate rescue dogs.
I know, like, it's, but she's so funny. Like, that she just finds a way to figure out and have this opinion that's insane and really funny.
Of the people who show up when you're co-anchoring Update and they're the guests,
yeah.
Which of those bits do you enjoy the most? Which character makes you
they're
laugh?
They're all, I mean, being out there with Cecily when she's on and Kate, Kate McKinnon and Keenan Thompson when he's out there.
Who's the uncle that he does, or the
Bob,
poor
yeah, drunk
Will,
uncle.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
Bobby
Willie,
Moynihan.
And Keenan's out. Yeah, Willie is great.
Big Poppy is the one that puts me away.
Oh,
that's the one that makes me laugh the hardest.
Because also he'll just turn and he'll just be like, "Yost, oh Yost," right. You know, or he'll just be like, "Hey," right. Just him saying "Hey" sometimes, or like, "Did you do this?" Yeah, bro. It just makes me. I'm like, he's such a funny performer.
And how much of that is ad libbed? I know when you've written your jokes and you do your Weekend Update, it's awesome. But there seems like there's a ton of give and take when
there's
those little
characters
are there.
It's fun, you know. There's a little bit. We write that together. That big Poppy, me and Keenan. So we write some of that in as we just talk it through, and then some of it ends up in. But yeah, especially when people are out there and you're feeling loose and it's fun, you just find little things here and there, you know.
And does an audience that's really loose and fun and into it inspire you to even push it to the next
level? Definitely. Yeah. You know, performers, you're never going to be like, I'm most satisfied here.
No, you want
more. Constantly craving more. Yeah.
But is this true, despite the fact that so many of the people on the show come from a world of improvisation, when you do stray from the script, Lorne Michaels isn't that thrilled with you? Is that kind of true?
Meaning, if you do improvise, or?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not. He's all for it. Thing you always have to be careful of is it's a live show and there's cameras. So, you know, if you're doing something unscripted and it's not on camera, you know, sometimes America would miss it.
Right.
So that's not. He's encourages people to. You also find a lot of it in rehearsals. You know, sometimes if you're messing around in rehearsal, you might find something and then you put it in the script just so, again, it's on camera.
Right.
So it's sort of that process. That's why you work so closely with, you know, why the actors and writers work so, you know, collaborate
sure.
with that.
Yeah. Sure.
All right, going to the text line right now. Ask Colin Jost why he isn't in any of the regular sketches, only on the news part. Thank you. That's a great question.
What a polite, nice, polite question. I don't know. I mean, I occasionally do something little. I mean, maybe I'll get to do more and more.
Is that something you want
to
do?
I'd like to do more. Yeah, it's funny. When you first, I've wanted to just focus on Update because it's a lot to figure out. So now we're having more fun doing it, and, you know, it might be fun to try some other things. But we have a great cast, so I'm very happy doing what I have. And if there's something here and there to try, I'll jump into it.
You know, it was nice on the last episode of the season, the one that Fred Armisen came back to host. You guys in Update did some of the jokes that were maybe too racy for the rest of the season, but it's the end of the year clearance sale, so do those jokes. That was killer. That was so funny.
It was fun. We had another one that I couldn't get in because of censors, but they had been reissuing Hitler's Mein Kampf, the book, in Germany, and it sold out all of his copies, and we had a joke that was Mein Kampf is, of course, German for the art of the deal. And we couldn't say that.
That's hysterical. How is writing for your stand-up different from writing for Update? I know structurally, but beyond that, what's in your head when you're writing for one as opposed to the other?
Yeah, well, I have legs.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
That's a huge difference in
full
stand-up.
Body.
Yeah, people can be like, wow, look at this guy, legs and everything. He can move. I don't know, it's different. You kind of, it's a lot more free. You know, all you have, it's the joy of doing stand-up. You just have a microphone and you're out there, and whatever, you live or die by that. On your own sword. I don't know, I could talk a lot more about what's going on in my life, about personal experiences had that you obviously don't have room for, or, I mean, no one on the news wants to hear about. What's your dating life, Colin?
Right.
Wouldn't that be great, though, if news anchors just did that, like, in between our top story, and then, I got blown off on my date last weekend.
I'm sleeping with this girl.
Right.
I mean, that would be fun. Basically, the only times you see it with real news anchors is when they're caught off guard on camera and they don't realize
the
they're on. Yeah, and that's all. It turns out that is what people want.
Yes.
It is.
All right, so you are at Zany's Chicago tonight, tomorrow night. There are two shows tonight?
One show tonight, but
tonight, Thursday. Okay, we got two Friday, and then we got three Saturday. So it's a real crescendoing.
Sunday?
No, I'm sticking back for Father's Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you say the Lord's Day?
It's the Lord's Day. Sunday's
yeah,
the Lord's
the
Day.
Lord. I went with Father's Day, but he, I guess he is the Lord of me. My
yeah.
father. Yeah. He was
where
definitely the Lord
dad?
Of the house.
Is he in the East Coast? Where
he's still. My parents are still on Staten Island, which is
oh,
where
nice.
I grew up.
Very
so they're
nice.
Still there. My parents live in the same house I grew up in. My grandparents live next door to them. It's like a full sitcom. It's like an Everybody Loves Raymond setup.
That's how they did it, though. I know that
that's
my
how
mom.
Yeah,
we were at least across the tracks from each other from my grandparents, but still the same neighborhood.
You at least had a railroad dividing you.
At least
it was harder. You could be like, I can't go. The train's blocking. I can't get over. I'd love to come. Try your casserole, but sorry, this train derailed right by between our houses. Sorry,
that'll be a blast.
But it's my family on Staten Island. Everyone's in the fire department. My mom
really?
still works at the fire department. My grandfather, great grandfather, all my cousins, and they all live on the same. Like my mom has literally three or four cousins and their whole families that live on our block. So it's just when you go home, half the block is Kelly's.
That's fantastic.
I love that.
Yeah, it's cool.
Nice little homecoming when you come
home. It's nice,
home.
Yeah. You get to. It's a good way to knock out a lot of relatives, you know.
Right. They didn't pressure you into becoming a firefighter.
My mom still. I probably on some level has hope that we'll go take the test.
You're gonna do that.
She
someday?
Made my brother took my brother's. You know, has a great job as a working comedian all the time, and she's like. She made him take the fire department test.
Really?
Still. And he took it, and he passed, and he's like, so he's like basically now up for a job in the fire department. He's like, I can't do this whole other job. But she loves, we do some stuff. We do like some charity work with the fire department, and it's not, I still love all the firefighters she works with.
Yeah.
They're like her family, too, and it's cool. It's a good
vibe. That's excellent.
Yeah.
It's always good to see you. You're doing
I'm
such
so happy
a big
I got to
job,
see you
honestly. We're proud. After we had you on last time, just a little inside,
sure.
You left here, and both Wendy and I said, we always liked you, but we like you even more. You're such a good guy. You're so funny, so keep up the great work.
That's very nice to hear. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
And
you know what else we realized? Bill and I have watched SNL since its inception
since
pretty much regularly.
Night. Yeah.
And
George Carlin
amazing,
show.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have never been to watch it live. Neither
well,
of us.
You guys got to come.
I know. We have to work that out with the station and maybe bring some listeners.
That'd be fun.
Just
oh,
one.
That'd be great.
That would be
just one listener.
One listener.
Just one
we mainly
lucky
just want to go for us.
Then it's,
yeah,
it's
of course.
A business
yeah,
expense
if
we get one. If
you
listener.
Get one, it's all tight. Hi, you're here for tax purposes, but I guess try to enjoy yourself. I don't know. They're like not even a fan. They're just
no.
like, it's literally your accountant.
Right. So what?
You just have visual evidence for your accountant.
Wear a codpiece when Leslie's around, will
yeah,
you?
Yeah,
protect
of course.
Yourself.
I always wear one in general. I mean, okay. I'm trying to bring that back as a clockwork orange style fashion to bring back.
How about that?
Never went out of style, Colin.
No, never did.
Went out
People
of style.
Just stopped acknowledging it.
No, it's the best.
But it's still the style.
Go see Colin Jost. He's at Zanies. 106 shows all weekend. Go to ChicagoZanies.com
all
or
hours.
His website,
it's like the Delta shuttle. I leave every hour.
Thanks, Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
Maybe he will.
I don't think it'd be hard to convince him to if he wanted to.
What do you want
to
know?
What's opening this weekend?
Zing! So to speak.
Dean, you broke your own record of going blue. You broke your own personal best.
I've never done that within 20 seconds.
You're fantastic.
Something to shoot for next week, so to speak.
Is the summer so far, Dean, everyone knows this in the world of movies, that you got your two hot seasons, the summer and Christmas. Is this summer so far panning out to be what they had hoped or not so much?
Yeah, it's. I think dollar-wise is just a little bit under where it was in the past, but I think most of the industry people are pretty pleased with what has been happening this year. One, that it seems to be leveling off, but also with films like Captain America that came out and broke box office records, Jungle Book that came out and broke box office records, Zootopia that I think really surprised everybody, came out and surprised everybody. And this was before the traditional summer season of films, which will include Independence Day, which will include Ghostbusters.
I'm looking forward to Ghostbusters.
Am
I the only one? No?
I am
okay,
too.
Good.
I don't care what everybody's saying. I do not understand this thing that came out of that it was the least liked trailer on YouTube or whatever it was. I mean, you can so easily manipulate anything online. And, you know, once, you know, the kind of the ball starts rolling down the hill, it becomes sort of self-perpetuating. I don't think there's anything bad about the trailer at all. I'm looking forward to seeing these, you know,
crazy broads,
crazy broads, you know, and seeing what they're going to do with this. I don't know if some people just hold this film in such sacrilege that anybody trying to, do it, you know,
it's never going to be right.
Lessens it in some way. You know, Aykroyd, Bill Murray, you know, many of the originals are, you know, if they're not part of this, you know, remake.
Is Ernie Hudson in it?
Ernie Hudson, I think, has a very small role in it. I think he has a small role in the new one.
So they are still paying tribute to the old, but they're bringing in a new cast. And how, why wouldn't they? You can't go wrong with this movie. It's such a beloved part of Americana in the cinema. People love Ghostbusters. It's going to do fine.
I think it's going to be perfectly fine. You know, I am a huge fan of Kristen Wiig. A huge fan of Melissa McCarthy. Kate McKinnon is...
Oh, she's a crazy girl.
Hilarious.
I know.
Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live. Hilarious.
She looks good in it, too, because sometimes a little of her goes a long way on SNL for me, but she looks... this is a perfect role for her, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. And that opens... let me see here. Ghostbusters is July 15th.
Yeah.
Yay.
So we have to wait a little while for that one. But, yeah, Aykroyd's in the new one. Ernie Hudson is in the new one. Annie Potts is in the new one.
Oh.
Sigourney Weaver is got a small role in the new one as well.
Zurg.
And that actor Hemsworth, who spends all of his time trying to look like Kevin, our producer, is also in
it. He's in it?
Yeah, playing a guy named Kevin.
Kismet.
Yeah.
Lawsuit.
Yep, we're suing.
Lawsuit.
We've already talked to the Briskman brothers.
Lawsuit.
Dean, before we get to the new movies, and I know you're tired of talking about Mel Gibson, but I have to tell you this. There's a channel on my satellite that just shows coming attractions for movies, and sometimes I'll sit through three or four or five of them, and there's this Mel Gibson movie coming out called Bloodfather that looks really good. Have you seen any or heard anything about this?
I have not seen the trailer. One of the downsides, one of the many downsides of being a critic is you've got to sit through all the awful movies.
Sure.
But also, we rarely see trailers when we go see movies. Usually they just show us the movie. So, you know, if I don't go seeking out a trailer, I don't see them. But I have heard about this Bloodfather. And I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to it as well. Elizabeth Rome is in it. William H. Macy is in it. Diego Luna. Some of my favorite actors are in this. And I will say, despite the little blow-up that Mr. Gibson and I once had, I think he's a great actor.
Yeah.
I think he's a great actor who had hopefully has resolved personal problems, but he clearly had some personal issues going on.
Sure.
But I was one of the few critics that gave what was the movie that that Jodie Foster directed? The Beaver.
Oh, right.
Remember
right.
The Beaver?
5 or 6 years ago? Yeah.
That was, you know, kind of an insane premise of this guy who goes insane. Talk about irony.
Yeah.
Who wears this beaver puppet on his hand all the time. And Mel Gibson was really nothing short of brilliant in that movie. So much so that I don't know if this was a joke on the part of the movie studio. They put my quote on the poster.
Oh, they did?
This was the movie after Edge of Darkness where we had our little
tiff
thing. But I thought it was the funniest thing I ever saw that after everybody had talked about Mel Gibson and I, and my quote winds up on the poster.
That's
what
beautiful.
Was the quote?
I don't know. It was very complimentary.
It was favorable. Yeah.
Yeah. It was Mel Gibson is, you know, a great actor, and I forget what I said exactly, but.
Well, this new movie with Mel Gibson, he plays a father who's trying to protect his 16-year-old daughter from drug lords, and I guess the original title was Liam Neeson Said No. But it looks really good.
You know what? We have to do something with our 50-plus actors.
Right. Right.
We've got to start making more movies like this.
Yep, Liam, so true.
Liam can't do everything.
No, he's busy. Dean is our guest, and we're going to talk about the new movies that are coming out this weekend. There's some good ones. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We're talking to Dean, aren't we?
Yeah, Dean, we're talking to Dean. Dean's talking to us. It's the way conversation should be. It's
I
Dean
forgot
Richards.
What we were doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dean, a couple of...
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You left an impression on you from that last segment.
That's no insult. Yeah, that's Wendy's way of complimenting you.
Who were we talking to 90 seconds ago?
Dean, finally, Finding Dory, the sequel to Finding Nemo, finally.
Yeah, were you a fan of the Nemo?
Loved it.
That was the sweetest
movie. Loved it.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was shocked that it's 13 years ago.
How about that?
Really?
It was a long time ago.
Yep.
I couldn't believe that it was 2003 that Finding Nemo came out. That was the story of the father who was looking for his son, Fish.
Mm-hmm.
A little side character was this cute little absent-minded Dory. Now, most of the focus is on Dory herself, voiced beautifully by Ellen DeGeneres. Dory now is very, very absent-minded, loses her parents, and the main plot line of the fish is Dory trying to find her parents in this film with the help of lots of other undersea characters, beautifully played. I think often I don't think that the voice characterizations make that much difference in animated films.
Yeah,
it's mostly the storyline. It's mostly the animation. It's mostly the cleverness of how the movies are put together, and you can pretty much put any actor, I think, usually into some of these voice characterizations, and that wouldn't make that much of a difference. I think this is the rare film where it really makes a difference. Ellen DeGeneres really brings out the dimensions of not only the character, but really blossoms this story. I think it's an exceptional voice piece of work that she does. Albert Brooks is back as Marlin, Nemo's father, who is helps to find the parents because he understands when you lose a relative, when you lose somebody close to you, how important it is to go to great lengths and even life-threatening lengths to try to find that person. I also want to point out a young actor by the name of Hayden Rowlands. He's 11 years old. He's a sixth grader from Aurora, Illinois.
Oh, wow.
Who got picked to do the voice of Nemo.
How cool is that?
And he, he's a young actor. He's, submitted his name, for different auditions and things like that. And he got, went to some auditions and kept getting called back and called back and called back. And this very, very nice young man who I met the other day, got the job and is now portraying one of the most famous fish in the world.
That's spectacular. Good for him.
Lucky kid.
Congratulations to Hayden.
Yeah.
Ed O'Neill is one of the voices in the movie. Diane Keaton, Ty Burrell, Caitlin Olson from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Eugene Levy, Idris Elba. They all do, I think, really exceptional work in this movie. And, the story is a nice one. It's exciting. It's funny. At times touching, at times may bring out a little bit of a tear, the way Pixar movies can sometimes do. Does it have the same impact as Finding Nemo? Probably doesn't. We've gotten so many Pixar movies in the last 13 years. I think I don't know that anything really can strike you as being so impactful as the original on this, which is not to say that it's deficient in any way. It's a perfectly nice film. Very, very entertaining, very funny, very sweet. I liked it quite a bit, and I wound up giving it a big old Dean's List A.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad to hear that. How has Pixar managed to pull this off when so many other movie companies can't seem to figure it out? They appeal to so many different levels. Kids love these movies. Adults love these movies. What do they know that other movie companies don't know?
I'm shocked that other movie companies haven't been able to figure out that it's all in the story.
Yeah,
it's always all in the story. Pixar, the making of this film, I talked with the director. I interviewed Ellen DeGeneres and Ed O'Neill and Ty Burrell and some of the other cast members over this past weekend in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
Which will play on my Sunday show this coming weekend, but also the director of the movie, Andrew Stanton. And they worked for 7 years on this movie?
Wow, no.
He told me that it took, I wondered why it took so, why we had to wait 13 years. I can understand 3 years, five mm-hmm. years, 7 years, That's a pretty long time to wait for a sequel. 13 years. He said it was 7 years before they even got the story right. So I think a lot of that speaks to your question. They could have easily slapped something together,
sure,
got it out there, made a boatload of money pretty quick. But they really were very careful in telling the story. They're so careful in the way that they animate things. They will have animators. I've been to the Pixar studio,
yeah,
Creative Factory. It's just outside of San Francisco. It's the most amazing creative environment. It's a big playpen for adults where, like, in this case, they sat around aquariums of fish watching the actual fish swimming around in the aquarium so they could get the motions of the fish done accurately.
Dean, you know, that's what we do here on the show when we're planning our next day's broadcast, is we just stare at fish and go, let's kind of do what the bettas are doing.
Somebody sprinkle some flakes on you,
right,
food.
Right.
Well, the bettas kill each other,
yeah,
don't they,
until get a
the
little,
end?
Sometimes they do.
You know,
yeah,
now that I think of it, yeah, being in the Allstate Showcase studio window is very much like being in an aquarium.
It's the same thing.
So, you know, people come by and tap on the window, and we jerk when people do that.
Right. Hey, sometimes a net will come in and take Bob and Marianne away. It's the weirdest thing you ever saw.
I thought that they were just inside the little treasure chest that
no,
opened and closed.
No.
I didn't know that they were,
nope,
actually gone.
They just took them away.
I really got to pay attention to Robert Feeder a little more.
So, all right.
I think it's quality. I think
good,
it's the quality that makes Pixar movies so great. The Finding Dory movie, really great, even for little kids. But there is a level of something going on in this movie for just about everybody, including adults. You're going to enjoy it when you take your kids. You're not going to sit there bored like sometimes happens when adults take their kids to go see a movie. So I think you're going to like it. I think, you know, you may come away saying it's not quite Finding Nemo. It's not quite Inside Out or,
yeah,
Wall-E or some of the really groundbreaking Pixar films. But it's more than perfectly entertaining, perfectly funny, very sweet. It's got everything going for it. So I really liked that one. The other one that's opening tomorrow is called Central Intelligence. That's with Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart. If only Kevin Hart could be a little busier.
Yeah, I
know.
And
be in more movies.
Know.
Poor guy can barely get a job.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this yet. I'm going to see this tonight. But it's a story about...
On purpose, right? You're going to see it on purpose?
I'm going to see it.
Bill is not a fan of Kevin
don't
Hart.
Don't like Kevin Hart.
I don't know why.
What's the problem?
I don't know.
He's jealous.
What's the problem?
It's jealousy.
Do you not like short people in
no,
general? Is that...
love short people.
Bill wishes he could sneak in and out of places easier, so he's jealous of his height.
I don't know why Bill don't like me.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't explain it.
Well, let us know on
is
that.
Is it just the, is it his style of comedy? Is it...
I think the word comedy is used improperly when describing him.
Oh.
He's never made me laugh. Ooh. I don't know what it is. Okay. I just don't, I don't
he
get him at all.
He makes everybody else laugh.
I know.
Much to your chagrin.
I know. I have chagrin.
There must be, you know, 3 to 5 times a week I hasten back to what Roy Leonard always used to tell me. That's why Baskin-Robbins makes 31 flavors.
He's right.
There's something for everyone.
Why do I always get vanilla there, then?
Yeah, I don't
tell
know.
Me that?
I don't know. But I just had this conversation with one of my best friends who's never liked Will Ferrell. He watches Will Ferrell and he goes, why does this guy get movies? And I love Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
So
even recently?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, you're just messed up, Bill.
It's all that chagrin.
There is something wrong with you and your chagrin.
I got too much chagrin
on that.
All right, so
yeah, this looks like from the descriptions that I read of this, like, you know, sort of a odd couple kind of pairing of a guy who used to be the most popular guy in school, Kevin Hart.
Yeah,
with the guy who was once a geek, now Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But I'll see it. I'll see it tonight, and I'll report back on Steve Cochran's show on that one tomorrow.
Excellent, excellent. Dean, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Always my pleasure.
It's Dean Richards, everybody. We'll take a quick break and find out what Steve has next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. Welcome to part 2 of our Thursday show. It's me, Bill. It's her, Wendy. want to jump in, you can. 312-981-7200.
All right. I have to bring something up, Bill, because earlier today we were looking out the Allstate Showcase studio, and because we like to people watch, to be honest.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Why wouldn't you?
And there was a very attractive young man who looked like he could have been a model of sorts.
He sure did, didn't he?
He had long hair and some little gym shoes on.
Yeah.
And
he
looked
like a model, and there was no doubt about it. You looked at this guy and you went, that guy, if he's not a model,
he should be.
He could be a model.
And I said, God, is he cute? And of course, Bill looks as I say that. And, you know, you didn't comment on how cute he looked, but you said, hey, wait a minute. That guy is wearing jean shorts.
Right.
He's got jorts on.
That's right.
And you said that your family mocks you and somebody told you never to wear them again.
I've been ostracized. We're coming up on a year. It'll be a year on August 6th. I've been told by my...
Did you put that in your calendar?
It's in my diary.
God, would I love to read your diary.
It's not for human consumption, Wendy. It's
dear
best,
diary.
It's best that
eBay
I'll,
had a sale today on action figures. Looking for Johnny Quest.
I'll give you a highlight every once in a while, but I don't want anyone...
Feeling lonely.
That's in there. So my daughters, Reese and Kylie, are here because they're big fans of Saturday Night Live, and we had Colin Jost on earlier, and the girls came to work with me. So they're here to tell about the torture that I endure on a nearly daily basis for certain items of clothing.
Namely jorts, right, girls?
Well, there's a specific pair of jort that I think needs to be talked about.
This is Kylie speaking.
Yeah, Kylie here. Mm-hmm. There is a jort that... It's ombre. It starts very very blue at the top.
Indigo blue at the top.
Yeah, a nice indigo blue. And then slowly fades into white as the jort ends above around the knee.
But the coolest part of it is
nothing.
It looks...
No.
There's no cool.
cool
part.
Yeah.
I know Reese will back me up on this when I say the coolest part of these particular pants is it looks like they're dripping. Like it starts out really indigo blue and then it comes navy and then periwinkle and different shades of blue.
I believe that's called acid wash, and I think you had those jorts when we worked at Q101,
exactly.
Which was how many years ago?
Oh, 20 maybe.
Hasn't thrown them away. Still in the drawer.
Some things never go out of style. There's certain things that never really go out of style. But I've been told, but with those in particular, the girls have said, if you ever wear those again, we will never speak to you again.
Well, we won't. If we go somewhere in public with you and you are in those, we will pretend stranger danger and stay far away from this. We don't know this man from the past.
That doesn't seem right. But even regular blue jean shorts, even like I have some that are really nice, expensive ones.
They're not
I've
nice.
I've been told I can't wear them.
They're more like carpenter's pants, don't you?
Yeah, they are. They're carpenter's pants.
How old are you?
I'll be 12 in November.
He has a surfer swag that he tries
to
go for.
Yeah, I got a bunch of surfer stuff.
But he's never been surfing, so it's kind of hard to understand.
Channel surfing is surfing. Cowabunga, I'm watching Channel 7.
Except I don't ever hear you say dude.
I don't say dude. I don't say that.
The surfer shorts would be good on you. Have you ever seen his turquoise high tops that he speaks
yeah,
of?
Yeah, I was actually saying that I forbid him from wearing those.
This is Reese talking.
They're just terrible. Yeah, I'm the one who sounds like a baby.
There's several items of clothes that between Reese, Kylie, and my wife, and I don't know when they have time to do this, but they have...
To criticize you?
Yeah, well, they find time to criticize. But there are certain items of clothing that I would be thrilled to wear that one, two, or all three of them have said, you can't, in all caps, you can't wear those.
No, yeah.
He can wear them on his own, preferably so we won't be seen with him.
Right. If I'm on a deserted island somewhere in the Pacific where no other human could see me, I guess it's okay.
Well, when you don't bring them to work tomorrow, why don't you wear one of these items of clothing?
And I will if you want me to.
We'll put you in front of the camera and the listeners can judge you.
I will.
That'll be fun.
That would be who would say no to that? What could I possibly lose in that? Now, also, there's a pair of tennis shoes that I have that are, I think, in what? You're already...
Well, the problem with the tennis shoes is that it's an ongoing joke between people our age that they make Snap Stories, if you know what a Snap Story is.
I don't know what that is.
From Snapchat?
Yeah, so it's a Snapchat, and kids our age will post pictures of the tennis shoes and write sarcastic comments about how cool these tennis shoes are. But the problem is it's sarcasm. Little do they know that those are the tennis shoes our dad has worn since the day we were born. Still
not those exact
white
same
Nikes.
Pair, but like when they get old, I'll go and I'll I'll replenish my supply. I'll get new ones.
Do you have a backup pair?
I have two backup pairs. I have a total of three. I just got new ones last week, but then I have two other pairs that are older.
I don't know these gym shoes, but Kevin, even you know these gym shoes.
I think your old retro gym shoes are awesome, Bill.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'm a fringe. Okay, I'm not as young as these girls.
Retro. He doesn't know they're retro.
I didn't know they were until just now, but thank you.
Did I say retro? I meant
current-tro.
Current-tro.
Now-tro.
And the jean shorts, I rock some jean shorts. You cut them off and you fold them up, you got a good look.
About that. And Kevin, explain again what your wife does for a living. Or your
She is
wife?
A fashion consultant at a high-end retail.
Yep.
I don't mean to sound rude here.
Yep.
How old is Kevin? How old are you?
Yeah.
Well, Kevin's a couple years younger than I am, but what I'm doing is I'm keeping the dream alive.
Well, it's also the monochromatic outfits. Right now you're wearing a blue shirt with blue shorts.
Right.
So it's like a blue-gray shirt. Yeah, it's very crayon-themed.
Yeah.
You know what? That is perfect for him. He loves Crayola crayons.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
That is how you dress.
It's easy for me.
And your shirt is different color. That's like
it's
the
like
label. It's the label of the crayon.
Because it says Benny and Smith on it? So what? That's a coincidence. That's the people who make crayons.
Oh.
But isn't it part of a father's job to consistently embarrass their wife and children?
You're not at that age yet.
I don't know. I don't know.
You got a big Father's Day planned for your crazy dad?
We are going out to dinner, maybe buying him some jeans. Mm-hmm.
But not shorts.
Not shorts. Some real dark wash jeans.
They keep saying that we've had a couple of shopping days where we'll all go to Old Orchard together, and they keep saying, let's spend some time on you. Let's find you some clothes. But
not enough time
we
in
did.
The world.
We did. We spent a little time on you.
A couple weeks ago.
Who bought the shirt he's wearing today?
He did.
That
he
was
did.
Mine.
For himself.
Yeah.
All right. That's kind of a woven. What color would you say, Mr. Crayola Crayon?
Blue. It's a shade I like to call blue.
Nightingale blue or
it's nightingale blue. Yeah, it's number, I think it's 312 on your color wheel.
Well, if you picked that out.
Everything I'm wearing right now, I picked out.
Well, the cargo shorts, that's not surprising.
Now, a cargo short situation, I don't mind. I don't think they're out of style.
But
you
we've
guys,
been told they are.
That's a lot of pockets. You don't need that many pockets. No one needs so many pockets.
I've seen 1,000 times your dad loses things. He's like, where's my car keys? Where's my car? Oh, it's in this pocket.
There's a lot
his glasses,
of pockets.
Every time.
But can I say, he did not lose them. They are on his person.
They're here somewhere.
He's lost them on his person. That's the problem.
He has to go through 100 pockets and then he finds
the other day, them. I'm going through my pants and I found the Lindbergh baby. Nobody's seen the Lindbergh baby in years. It was in one of my pockets.
You were going through your pants and found the
yeah,
Lindbergh baby?
Yeah, it was in my pocket. The Lindbergh baby was in my pocket.
I, you know, it's a guy thing because Jimmy Mack loses everything all the time. His last name, we call him Jimmy Mack, and every time he pats, like, okay, where's my wallet? He'll pat his shoulder,
yeah.
His other shoulder. We call it the Macarena,
it is the Macarena
because he cannot find anything. And you've been doing that recently, but
I
you
know.
Haven't lost stuff.
No, it's in there. It's in there somewhere.
I don't mind the cargo shorts, but the jorts.
That's a bad thing.
I can't believe for a minute he. Why don't you wear them tomorrow?
I could do that for you. I would do that.
We'll laugh you at you all
to,
day.
I'm used to that. Whatever. I can do that.
Why doesn't he give them away? If you have said, really, Dad,
no one
Salvation
wants
Army
that,
said
yeah.
No. I brought him to Salvation Army. They're like, sir, there's the door. We don't have time for this music. I don't know what that meant.
Well, you have a great dad, and he's sure fun to hang out with all day.
Oh,
so
we agree with that.
Oh,
and
you.
Your mom is so wickedly funny. Do you guys all laugh all the time at your house?
Yeah, there's not dull moments. Our friends like to come out and hang out with our parents, which is actually pretty
That's
rare.
Sad.
It really no.
See
it's
you, Kylie.
Not.
See you, Reese. You guys are going out. We're going to stay here with Bill and Terry.
It's wonderful. I mean, you know, I think it's the way it should be. So,
and how's the rabbit?
The rabbit's great. The girls have
rabbit.
A pet rabbit.
Does he ever take care of... What's the rabbit's name?
The rabbit's name is Bunny, but according to him, it's just the rabbit.
I'm just hearing this Bunny thing for the first time now.
No, you're...
I didn't know what the rabbit's name was till just now.
Does your dad ever take care of the Bunny?
He,
or the rabbit?
You've given her lettuce
they
before.
They
look
yeah.
at each other.
Yeah,
that's
we look at each other.
Goes.
It's one of those... it's a guard rabbit. You know, if there's ever trouble at the house, the rabbit will take care of business.
I've heard of a guard llama, but not a guard rabbit.
It's a guard rabbit. It's a watch rabbit.
Well, you're lucky to have a great dad like this, so I hope
yeah.
you have a great Father's Day.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. There are some calls for people who want to help me. Not that I need help, but I guess people want to help. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you in a little bit. 312-981-7200. We're talking fashion, as we always do. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. cultural treasures, industrial history, and Harleys by the hundred. See Milwaukee's most unusual attractions. It's Cruisin' Wisconsin tonight on WGN TV News at 9.
Hey, you can do some cruising in your jorts.
Yeah, that's meant to make fun of me. What better way to celebrate Father's Day than to have my two lovely daughters, Reese and Kylie, in studio and criticize my fashion trends?
All right, well, somebody's criticizing your Lindbergh baby joke, because the Lindbergh baby was found and buried.
Did they find the Lindbergh baby? I'm just, it's all right, guys. It was 80 years ago. It's okay.
Jorts, 630 says, jorts and Hawaiian shirts all summer. My kids won't be seen with me.
Oh,
that's did your dad sad. Ever wear a Hawaiian shirt?
No, I don't think a Hawaiian shirt is a trend that we've seen.
No. Even in Hawaii, I did not wear a Hawaiian shirt.
Well, you're a rebel. Of course you wouldn't wear it there.
Although in Iowa, I wore an Iowa shirt. That's weird.
You know what you look good in is your Hawks sweater.
Yeah.
You don't do enough jerseys. I like guys in jerseys. Yeah. Is that okay, or you don't think that passes the fashion test?
Yeah, I think jerseys are pretty fashionable. It's a very frat boy thing.
Yep.
I think he's missing that whole half of it.
And frat boys don't wear jorts. No, hombre jorts.
No, I'm learning that. But why was it okay? You know, this started out by you saying that there was a guy who looked like a model out front wearing jean shorts. Why was that okay for him to wear, but I can't? I don't understand.
I think you just answered the question.
I guess so. I guess I did. Maybe that's
you
what
it
is.
You could be a model, and I'm not even going to say a hand model. You could be like in J. Crew or something.
Right.
More rugged. But they don't wear jean shorts in J. Crew. Khaki shorts.
Now, I think I got a pair of these at J. Crew, one of the jean
like
shorts.
30 years ago.
It was a couple years back. Right.
All right.
But I still do see them. I mean, it's if you called J. Crew right now, they still have men's jean shorts at J. Crew.
Yeah, because no one's buying them. That's why they still have them.
All right, maybe.
All right, someone has a great idea for you. This is Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hey, listen, for 1 week, you should have Kylie and Reese dress Bill, take pictures of him every day, and then have Bill go back to his regular dress and just kind of compare the two.
I would do that.
I think that should be done.
I would do that.
That's a brilliant idea.
I'm all right with that.
All right, when does this start?
Whenever they want. Whenever
you
guys want.
Can you start next week? Are you girls around to dress him next week?
We will start Monday.
All right. You want to do that?
A full week?
Can I commit to a whole week? No, I don't have enough what they would consider to be cool clothes to pull off a week.
Go shopping on Father's Day.
They are young, they are intelligent, and they are creative. They can use your entire ensemble that you have now, and they can create something. And your hat is not exempt.
Oh,
you
no.
Get rid of your hat, too,
oh, no.
If they don't want you to wear it.
Yeah.
Or maybe a different hat.
All right, well, maybe.
Do you know so many people criticize Bill over his hat? I don't see what the big deal is. Let me go to the girls, Kylie, Reese. Does it bother you that your dad wears a baseball cap? Or are you just used to him with it?
Well, I have had people seriously ask me if I've seen him without a hat on.
Have you?
Yes.
Many
certain
times.
I've seen you without a hat on.
Yeah. But on the days, like when we did the WGN Walk of Fame, I was dressed up and I did not wear a hat. I was uncomfortable all day. Because I felt like I should be, I was wearing like a suit and stuff, and I felt like I should be saying something important. When I'm wearing a baseball cap, it's just like whatever happens, happens.
And I got to tell you, it's radio. Bill and I did not get into radio for the fashion, obviously. Mm-hmm. We're the worst dressed show.
Proud of it.
Thank you, Joe. That is a great idea.
Thanks, Joe. Really good idea.
In fact, let's give Joe something. Joe, that was such a good
idea. Joe, come shopping at J. Riggins with me.
Will do.
All right.
Let's set you up with a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. And Kevin, get Joe's information because I think we should revisit with Joe after this competition.
That's a good idea.
Fashion flair,
yes.
Whatever it is. Hang
right.
on, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
But you know how like a generation ago, like my brother and I used to rip on my dad because he thought that shorts with dark socks was the way to go. So we would try to convince him that that was not a good idea. This is just something that's been going on forever. There's always kids telling their dad, whatever you're wearing, not a good idea.
Although, correct me if I'm wrong, Reese and Kylie, don't guys today wear dark socks with those stupid, Adidas slip-ons. They're like flip-flops, but they're not. They're a slip-on. I've seen so many kids
too.
With the tall, yeah. dark knee socks.
Right. With the like gym, the basketball shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
That's I mean, it's definitely a look for people who are in their teenage years.
To be ironic, right? To be to make fun of society and say,
why don't you dress like that?
Maybe I will. All right. I could do that. All right. Thank you guys for being here. Do you have a website you want to promote? Nothing? All right. That's my daughter's, the beautiful Reese and the beautiful Kylie. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much.
Don't like it.
Boy, don't I know it. They're rocking the Casbah, Wendy. Earlier in the show, we were talking about what went on in the Senate last night with Chris Murphy. That's the Democratic senator from Connecticut, as he went on a 15-hour filibuster. And both you and me said essentially the same thing. You and I said the same thing. The two of us said the same thing.
We
said the same thing. We remembered hearing a little bit about filibusters when we were in history class in grade school, but didn't know all the particulars of what a filibuster was comprised of. Paul Green joins us right now, Arthur Rubloff Professor of Policy Studies and Director of the Institute for Politics over at Roosevelt University and a frequent contributor to this very radio station. Paul, thank you very much for being here. How are you? Everything good?
All right. Good to be with you guys.
Thank you.
All right. I did not remember what a filibuster was, and I felt kind of foolish, and it was great to find out. Bill didn't know, and even Steve Bertrand was a little unsure.
Oh, that's shocking. I'm shocked. Shocked.
That one shocked me, too.
That was shocking.
But now, what exactly is a filibuster, first of all?
Well, the political science 101 definition of it is rather simple. In the U.S. Senate, any senator can get up, or a group of senators can get up. Murphy, this fellow had help from other senators, including our own Dick Durbin. They could, as long as they get the floor, they could speak as long as they want on any topic they want. And the only way you could end it is if 60 senators or three-fifths of the Senate, who often you don't have 100 there, but they got to be three-fifths of those people there, vote cloture, which means closed debate. And it's very difficult to do that because, especially in a Senate that's divided somewhat evenly. And so all that is that, you know, you can't do it often because then it becomes rather repetitive. But there have been somewhat historical filibusters. Strom Thurmond once went almost 24 hours. Former Senator Moore from Oregon went like over 20 hours. By the way, those guys did it by themselves. But it's a technique. You usually tick off a lot of people when you do it, especially on the other side. But that's all it is. The House of Representatives does not have a filibuster rule, but the Senate simply says as long as you have the floor, you could talk on any topic you want for as long as you want. And the only way they can stop you is by having three-fifths of the senators vote cloture or vote to end debate.
So, Paul, if if Murphy's going on and then he wants to yield to Durbin, he doesn't yield control of the floor. He yields some of his own time to Durbin, how is it that he maintains control?
I'm not sure, but I think it's sort of like passing a baton. The reality is that everyone knew what was happening. And so, you know, he gave it to Durbin. Normally you have one person. Ted Cruz very recently did his own, I think, 10 or 12-hour filibuster.
But I know this sounds like I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding. He was reading Dr. Seuss books during that.
Yes, he was. That was one of his...
I thought you were kidding about this earlier. What was that? What was the point of that?
I know on radio you really shouldn't say this, but sometimes you really got to fill air.
Yeah.
I mean,
That's what he was doing.
Yeah. He could read anything. He could read the dictionary.
All right. Well, this nonstop speech went 14 hours and 50 minutes, and it did work because now the GOP has agreed to allow these gun control votes?
Well, yes, but it's really more complicated than that. The Republicans are saying they would have had votes. This is an amendment to the appropriations bill, and many Republicans have their own amendments. So they were going to call the bill, allegedly. Who knows? So now they're saying all the Democrats were trying to do was win political points, which is like stating the obvious. But yes, there is now a debate within the debate whether or not the Democrats were just grandstanding and that the Republicans were going to call the bill anyways because they have, for different reasons,
And the issue at hand here on whether to ban people on the government's terrorist watch list from obtaining gun licenses.
Right.
And whether to expand background checks.
Background checks on the no-fly thing is really the big one, because what the Democrats have done, they've tied gun control into terrorism. And that's something that's very difficult to vote against. My guess is there will be a watered-down version that will be compromised to get this through. That's my guess. You never know, because the process, the Senate is nothing but many rules on top of rules. And I would guess, and only a guess, that they're going to come to some compromise solution, which will probably not satisfy everybody. But the NRA is going all out to stop any kind of control. That's a fact.
Professor Paul Green on the line with us. Now, Bill, you had mentioned, is there a time limit? And I questioned whether or not you had to, in advance, say, we are going to be holding a filibuster.
Schedule it?
Can you just stand up and begin filibusting?
You could just stand up and do it, but I think there was a warning because Senate Majority Leader McConnell did nothing to, you know, there was no screaming and no yelling. It was sort of, okay, do your thing. And that was it. I mean, the internal debate within the Senate with their rules and with their history is much too complicated to discuss, and I am not an expert on all the intricacies. All I can tell you is that given what had happened in Orlando, some form of that bill on gun control was going to be called. Now, whether it passes or not is a different issue.
Paul, the reason that we keep hearing that the NRA's lobby is so strong, probably the strongest lobby of anything, mm-hmm. is that they are funding various political candidates. So mm-hmm. then the political candidates do pretty much anything the NRA tells them. Is it just that simple, or is there more to it than that?
That's a good chunk of it. One of the favorite sayings, noisy squawks till money talks. You can use that one if you like.
I will use that. Thank you.
Okay. The reality is that they do fund, but it also is the political side. Since we have so few contested congressional races, where you have now this year, because of perhaps Mr. Trump, there may be more contested House races, but the maps have been so, shall we say, set up so that many of these congressmen, the only way they can lose is in a primary, which gives the NRA, for Republicans, tremendous power, because they say you'll be a big shot with the independents and some Democrats may like you, but we're going to defeat you in the next primary because you're not a Republican enough. And, you know, compromise has become a dirty word. To use the old political science 101 phrase, compromise used to be the mother's milk of politics. Today it's almost a death knell. So that has changed in America. So that's their power. It's the power in the primary, not necessarily in the general election.
I am very ignorant when it comes to politics, and I'm not ashamed to ask questions, but here's my question. In radio, you cannot do payola. You cannot accept things for free in order for airtime. In a weird way, this is kind of like payola. You are not going against them because you want their money. How is this legal?
It's legal because the second smartest people in government dealing with this issue are the lawyers and the Federal Elections Commission who make the rules. However, the smartest people in politics are the ones who are able, the lawyers who are able to get around it. And believe me, there are so many ways you get around this. I mean, you can set up a PAC, a super PAC now. It's one of the things Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have been screaming about, where you have a pot of money that no one knows who's contributing to it, and somehow it gets directed at your political enemy. I mean, there are ways to get around it. I use this line with my father-in-law when he talked about catching fish. Only the dumb ones have been caught. That holds true here. Only the dumb ones have been caught. People who take money like under the table or all that kind of old-fashioned stuff, that's silly, because you can do the same thing for your campaign legally. You don't have to, an envelope in a dark corner. You don't have to do that.
Seems like I would like to filibust and make the NRA not so powerful. It just feels like this is corrupt.
But anytime anyone does essentially what Wendy says, it dies a quick death. They're that strong, aren't they, Paul?
Yes, but there are other PACs that are pretty close to, lobbying groups. I mean, the Democrats have theirs too. And a part of that, you can see what's happening in our disaster in the state of Illinois, where you have real strong unions who are the major source of funding for Democrats, holding the line too. I mean, we could talk all we want about, money, and now that Sanders' campaign is over, this kind of nostalgia, Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of thing. But without the dollars to run, you really are in big trouble, whether it's national, state, and even aldermanic races. I mean, that's where it is. And given, watch this, remember, it's Paul Green, not you guys.
Right.
Given the fact that the media plays along with this, no television or radio station is ever going to be upset about the amount of paid advertising on their station.
And that's true.
I said that. I don't want you guys to get
No, don't worry.
No, I mean, there's some truth to that, but it seems like, you know, we're just going with how the system currently is. I don't know. To me, that is the changes that need to be made, not the gun control issues. We have to change the way these lobby groups are able to tell us what to do.
Go on, Paul. I'm sorry.
No, real quick, there was a study a couple of years ago about for congressional races and looking at which 435 districts, and some of them were uncontested, but which of the contested districts, who won, and the correlation between winner and the most money spent was over 90%. The more money you have, the greater your chance of winning.
Paul, getting back to something you said a little while ago about the media and accepting money from the various candidates, I believe the FCC mandates that if any political party wants to buy time on your station, you can't reject that. Isn't that correct?
Yes, and you can give the lowest amount of
airtime.
Yeah, what they pay is
the lowest rate.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had this conversation. I'm not telling stories out of school, but since Illinois has become a blue state, a lot of television stations especially have been hurt on political advertising.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the only time you see a presidential candidate coming in over Illinois is when they're flying to Iowa or Wisconsin. So you don't have any real in the general election. It's a tough issue. I mean, the stations must do it. I think there's some regulations here or there about what kind of political campaign advertising. But still, I mean, you would think that, let's put it like this. Paid media, a 30-second cartoon, absolutely clobbers intense debate on C-SPAN.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people don't want to listen to that. They don't want to pay attention to that. So you give them 30 seconds and bang, they got their thing. Or a clip on this or a clip on that. I think that's one of the secrets of Donald Trump's great success in the Republican race for the nomination is that he gave his sound bites were, you know, short, quick, snappy, and no one was confused at what he was saying.
Paul, here's a quick text, 708. Please ask Paul Green, are we to trust politicians who look to get around the law? That's part of politics, isn't it, Paul?
Well, I don't know if it's around the law, but you got to have the money. And I am a great defender of elected officials. I have worked with them for decades. And especially the more local you are, there are a lot of overwhelming number of people are just in it, not for the money, but in it for help their community. But when you get up to with the big dogs, the Senate, the House, and you have races, I mean, our Senate race between Kirk and Duckworth this November, I would say that'll go north of $20 million.
Yeah.
I mean, so where do you get that money? And, you know, I think that's something that how do you deal with it? You have First Amendment rights. You know, one of the things they talked about is, you know, changing with the Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United about calling corporations, they have a right to put as much money as they want into it. I mean, that's one of the things that Sanders and Clinton railed about is that the money in this thing is astronomical. And, you know, you can't play the game unless you have the dollars to play.
Of course. Paul, do me a favor. Let's pick that up in just a little bit because we have more questions for you. And if you have any questions or comments, Paul Green is our guest, the director over at the Institute for Politics at Roosevelt University. Give us a call or a text right now, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, so we're talking about the filibuster, the 15-hour filibuster that went on last night. Professor Paul Green on the line with us. And where were we, Bill?
Well, there's a couple of different questions. Actually, ask your question. You and I were discussing this off air, and this is a great question.
All right, Paul Green, here's my question.
Yes.
In the past, it seems like whatever Donald Trump did, however shocking it was, his support was growing day by day. And now I am hearing rumblings that maybe he is losing some steam. I wanted your opinion on that.
Well, I wrote about this, so I'll just pardon the expression, quote me. When you're running in a Republican primary, you're appealing to a certain segment of the voters. You're not appealing to the general voters. You're appealing to people within the Republican Party. And I wrote that the people listening to Donald Trump, they didn't care about the lyrics. They liked the music of what he was saying. So he could say any outlandish thing he wanted, but they liked the fact that he was saying it and how he said it and how he looked. You know, I'm chairman of the City Club of Chicago, and we had Mr. Trump at our almost a year ago at our meeting, and he was absolutely spectacular.
Charismatic, I mean, I've heard.
Absolutely right. And what you there is, he, except for the fact that now he occasionally reads a speech from a teleprompter, I saw his notes, and they were basically like Abraham Lincoln were on the back of an envelope, and they were not, they were just words. So this man has the ability, because of, I think, television or his own personal experience as a businessman, to be as quick as anybody I've ever seen. And again, nothing in depth, and sometimes he has a sentence with four predicates, but nevertheless, the people who are his fans and his supporters, they don't care that it doesn't necessarily follow in any kind of order. They just like the fact that he's saying it and sticking it to the people in both political parties that they think should be stuck.
Paul, in this election, the election that we're going through right now, this election cycle, we have Donald Trump, a businessman. We had Carly Fiorina, a CEO, former CEO. We had Ben Carson, a surgeon. One of them making it all the way to being the candidate for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Is this the new normal? Is this what we'll see going forward in other elections? Is people who don't really have a political background making it this high?
I think in the Republican Party, for sure, that could be. Remember, anyone who had a record. I mean, I'm surprised Kasich, as a governor, lasted as long as he did. I mean, anytime these guys in that big debate, when they had all those debaters, look at my record, that was like a death sentence. I mean, because people don't want to hear about your record. So, yeah, there will be a pop-up candidates without, you know, it all depends how Trump does in the general. But, yeah, because people who are anti-government, who think that basically the governmental system we have is just, I can't think of a better word, just sucks. They're going to be looking for anybody who's outside. In the Democratic Party, I think they weathered the fight much better in that Sanders, who for the first time in his life was running as a Democrat, demanded the party that he never belonged to change their rules. That's not going to happen. So what you have in effect is that I think your past record as a Democrat will still count to something, at least your public record. But in the Republican Party, you may have all kinds of people trying to emulate what Trump did. But my opinion, there aren't many Trumps out there that could, you know, wheel it and wing it. That's the word I'm looking for. Wing it like he did, when in effect people study and they have all this stuff going on and they read, you know, white papers. He never did any of that. And he clobbered his opponent. So I don't have any analogy. There was never been a candidate like Trump in my lifetime, and I covered 14 conventions for this station.
But how will that serve him now that it's down to two, now that it's just down to he and Hillary Clinton, when they're debating, how will that, I'm not going to study, I'm just going to talk off the top of my head tactic, work for him?
It's not. Though Mrs. Clinton has plenty of her own baggage when it comes to preparation for a debate, as witness her debates with Mr. Sanders, she's going to be totally prepared on foreign policy. It's not going to be close. And if he just wants to wing it and give, you know, adjective and adverb answers instead of nouns and verbs, he's going to have a lot of problem. Also, keep in mind that there's that libertarian candidate, Mr. Former Governor, I think Johnson from New Mexico, who, you know, the old notion may have some more staying power than people think. And for some of you more mature people, you may remember in 1992 when Bill Clinton beat George Bush, the first, one of the reasons he won was a guy named Ross Perot, who took 19% of the vote. So the Clintons may benefit again from a third-party candidate.
But he won't be allowed, the libertarian candidate won't be at the debates, will he?
All depends. Now, there's a good question, and I don't know what the rules are, if it's 10% or 15% in five polls or whatever it is, but if he suddenly starts surging, yes, he'll be at the debate. I think there's a limit.
I miss H. Ross Perot. I really do. Where is he now?
I don't know where he is now. Paul, do you?
Oh, God. What the heck? I'm the man who on the radio station back then called him Gabby Hayes with a checkbook. I'm sorry. That was
Gabby Hayes with a checkbook.
Yeah, that
beautiful.
Was
well.
That was one of my lines. You know, I'm on with Spike. You got to come up with something. But yeah, I think he just simply burnt out. I mean, he was I interviewed him, and I'll be honest,
Paul, remember this? We hosted a show. He started a show for WGN, yeah. And
Ross Perot did?
Ross Perot had a syndicated show through WGN.
Was it called, well, let me tell you something.
A guy named Chris Bly would fly down to Dallas every Sunday to help facilitate the show. Yeah, it was a WGN
And that's during his run for presidency?
I think it was probably after his run.
Afterwards.
He's, but it's still, it was great listening, I'll tell you that.
He's still alive.
He's an interesting man.
85 years old.
He was.
He was mesmerizing, although he looked 85 then.
Well, remember, he left because people were going to mess with his daughter's wedding. That was his exit.
Oh, wow.
And then he came back in and still got 19% of the vote. You know, at the 92 Democratic Convention, when he kind of, you know, when that story broke, those Clinton people were really concerned about him. I mean, to be blunt about it, and then he just self-destructed. There was a conspiracy. They were going to assassinate his daughter
something. Well, that was it. They were going to disrupt her wedding, he said.
Paul, we appreciate your time. Paul Green, of course, from Roosevelt University.
My pleasure. But I promised a producer I would give you the, because filibuster was the original
question.
Thing.
Yeah.
The great Spike Odell, when asked about this, said, "That guy, he used to be on Howdy Doody."
Beautiful.
Phineas T. Buster.
Phineas T. Bluster, I believe, right?
Bluster, yes.
I remember him, sure.
That was my legacy.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Paul Green from Roosevelt University. Let's take a quick break, and then Steve with the news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Look out for that ottoman.
Well, sometimes he'll trip over the ottoman, but then other times he'll just kind of dance around the ottoman.
He's a good dancer.
He's a spectacular... Dick Van Dyke was a spectacular dancer.
He was a spectacular entertainer. Is he still with us?
Yeah, he's still... Oh, boy, yeah, he's still with us.
Oh, he is still with us.
He is still with us. I think he's 90 or 91 years old.
God bless him.
I love Dick Van Dyke. I can't say any other thing than I love that man.
All right, go home now.
I love that man. I love that Dick Van Dyke.
Was fantastic.
In every way. In every way.
Still is fantastic. Isn't he? Just saved his home, didn't he? His boyhood home last year or something?
Yep. Yes, he did. I have some sad news to report.
He died.
No, Dick Van Dyke is alive. But his next door neighbor on the Dick Van Dyke show.
Jerry?
Helper. No, Jerry died years ago. Jerry died years ago. And I don't know if you know this. He's from here. Jerry, the guy who played Jerry Helper, Jerry Paris, is from the near North Side. He went to the same high school as my dad, to Sullivan High School.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's originally from Chicago. But Ann Morgan Gilbert is no longer with us.
And
as
she
of
would
yesterday.
Still pop up on shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I just saw her on Life in Pieces a couple months ago, where she played the grandmother, either James Brolin's mother or Diane Wiest's mother.
Later in her life, she had a look where it was recognizable but not identifiable.
Yeah.
You know, so like, oh, I know who that is. I know who that is.
Yeah.
And then it would come to you.
Yeah.
That was really a fantastic show, the Dick Van Dyke show.
It was so good in every way. Just absolutely perfect.
And the lovely Mary Tyler Moore, who was just
stunning,
so beautiful.
Stunning.
Laura Petrie.
And they didn't want to give her the part because they thought she was too young. Nobody would believe that she would be married to Dick Van Dyke, because there was there was quite an age difference between them.
It didn't look that much as a kid watching it.
No.
I didn't think, oh my God, he scored.
Do you wonder something strange? I had this theory about the Dick Van Dyke show, and I've thrown it past a couple of people that are like inside TV people, and so far they've agreed with me, and here's what it is. This was the early 60s. The Dick Van Dyke show came on in either 1961 or 1962. I don't remember which. And I said, when I was a kid, when I would see the Petries, when I would see Robin Laura Petrie, I saw the Kennedys. It looked like John F. Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy to me. And several people have said that was part of the appeal. It was subliminal because the show was obviously not political. But
he looked like a goofy JFK, though.
A very goofy JFK.
Like JFK unplugged big
time. Yeah.
Because she just, I mean, that was the Jackie O'Hare with the little, the bob and the flip at the bottom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look-wise, they did kind of resemble them, but I never would have
You wouldn't have
that.
Equated it? Also, if you look back at what made that show so great, aside from just perfect casting, top to finish, they so seamlessly blended Rob Petrie's home life. You had the characters that he had at home, his family and his next-door neighbors, and then his business life, and then sometimes would mix them, and it was very believable, because that's what our lives are.
They did do, I mean, the Honeymooners did that too, but it would just be lodge meetings or bowling. And you're right, this was a really great blend at a time where you didn't see that much.
Right, right, right. So Anne Morgan Gilbert, and here's something curious about her death. She was 87 years old. She died in Los Angeles on Tuesday.
Which is young. I'm sorry, you're hearing all these people living well into their 90s. That's almost young in my opinion now.
Yeah, yeah.
I say that because I'm getting closer to that age.
I know. In most of the obituaries and in most of the headlines that I found yesterday when they were reporting on Anne Morgan Gilbert's death, it said, actress from Nanny dies. And she was on The Nanny for a while, but...
Juliette Mills, who was the nanny?
No, that was...
Nanny and the Professor.
Yeah, that was Nanny and the Professor.
I'm getting my nannies mixed up.
The lady with kind of the cloying voice. She has a very, like, New York-sounding accent.
The Nanny, like, reality show?
No, no, no.
Oh, Fran Drescher?
Fran Drescher, yeah. Yeah. She was on that for a while.
She was?
Yeah. But it's just weird that...
Wow, she must have had mortgage payments.
She was, well, sure. She was Grandma Yetta on the 1990s sitcom The Nanny, but I would think a lot more people would know her as Millie Helper, right?
Absolutely.
You had Millie Helper and Jerry Helper. And then their son, Hamburger Helper. I think most people would probably know her as the next-door neighbor on the Dick Van Dyke Show than from The Nanny.
Did you bring all this up just to get your Hamburger Helper joke?
Yeah.
Let me give you a glove.
That's why she died. I said to her, I've got this joke, and I don't know where to put it. Could you die so I could do the joke? So, yeah. I mean, that was part of I think the charm of that show was just the background characters and the interaction between Rob and everybody else in his world, you know?
They really just looked like they had it going on.
Do you remember the episode where Rob and Laura went over to the helper's house for a dinner party and they were playing charades and everybody got mad at everybody?
Yes.
That was fantastic.
And it's pretty realistic,
Very
too.
Very realistic.
I'll tell you, they really nailed
Very
it.
Very realistic.
All right, Ron has some Dick Van Dyke trivia for us. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Bill, Wendy, how you doing?
Great.
Excellent.
Hey, Bill, this is Ron from Midlothian.
Before
in the past.
Yeah.
Listen, a little bit of trivia. I told your producer I'd be very brief, so I'll keep my word. The Dick Van Dyke Show, it was the last show to be filmed entirely in black and white.
Really?
Really. And if you look that up, and they actually were going to almost renew it for a seventh, I think it was on for 6 years or 7 years. They were almost going to renew it for a seventh year. But the producers decided that we've done pretty much all the possible plots, and not the network canceled it. They just decided not to do it. However, they were willing to do it in color, but it was the last show to be filmed entirely in black and white.
It works better in black and white. It fits better just in our heads.
Absolutely.
It wouldn't have played as well, I don't think, in color, you know?
Little bit of useless trivia, and I just thought you might like that. I know you have a lot of trivia.
I live for that, Ron. I love it.
Thanks,
you so
Ron.
Much. Appreciate it.
You might have been stumped by Midlothian, Ron.
Oh, maybe.
And Mike, you had a comment on the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Yeah, I'll be brief, Wendy and Bill. A long time ago, I was listening to Roy Leonard, and he had Dick Van Dyke on his show live. And we got to call in, and I told him how much I loved the show. And I said, where does Buddy come up with all those jokes about Mel and his baldness? And he said, none of that stuff was ever in the script. And Maury Amsterdam ad-libbed all those bald jokes on Mel. So it was kind of cool when he told me that.
They used to call Maury Amsterdam. Oh, well, I just wanted to say, they used to call him the human joke machine. They said in his head he had somewhere between 10 and 15,000 jokes ready at any time. And plus the fact that he was really quick on the draw anyway, so he could have thought something on the spot. But, yeah, that's part of the strengths of the show was him.
Yeah, it was a great show. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Oops, you're welcome.
He faded off into oblivion.
He did.
I just watched him
just
fade
like
away.
Millie.
Yep, sadly true.
All right, another celebrity death in the news. That's sad.
Yeah, very, very sad. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We're going to get the lead out right now because that's what's going on in a courtroom in L.A. How would you like to be walking by that courtroom and you see Robert Plant and Jimmy Page walking in?
That would be an amazing
would be
sight.
Cool to
yeah.
Me. Here's what's going on. There is a guy, Randy California, who is in the band Spirit. And I think you know that band. I Got a Line on You, Babe.
Oh, yeah, sure,
Mr.
of
Skin.
Course. Yeah.
There's a song that Randy California wrote. It was a love song to his then-girlfriend, maybe wife, and it was called Taurus. And Randy California is basically saying that Led Zeppelin stole the opening riff of Taurus and put it to use in Stairway to Heaven. And they did tour together during the early days. And this is a very big deal. I don't know if you remember, Robin Thicke was gone after by Marvin Gaye's estate.
I do remember.
And Marvin Gaye's estate won.
Yeah, because
Robin Thicke, Blurred Lines, took one of the songs that Marvin Gaye had written.
Right.
So this is kind of the same thing. My question is why they waited so long. Like, Stairway to Heaven has been making millions of dollars for how many years?
For 50 years, right?
So why now? Jimmy Page took the stand, and he says he didn't hear the Spirit song Taurus at all until a few years ago, when his son-in-law noted that there was growing internet buzz about the potential similarity between the two tunes. So he's claiming he never heard that song. Jimmy Page went on to say that I had the second and third Spirit records. I had purchased them. I had never listened to the first one. And he says, I don't do the internet. So his son-in-law played it for him. Page said, I was confused by the comparison. I thought, what's this got to do with the Stairway? Or with Stairway, not with the Stairway. Page acknowledged that several Spirit records were included in his sizable music collection. He has over 10,000 LPs, Bill.
But he says not that first album.
But maintained that he wasn't familiar with the tune he allegedly stole from until long after Stairway to Heaven was written.
That's interesting. I wonder.
I want to know what's going on, but can we compare and contrast?
I'd love to, yeah.
Because this is the song Taurus, first and foremost, because we, in our heads, know the riff to Stairway to Heaven, which we'll play.
Okay.
But it's pretty remarkably
very close.
Similar.
Yeah, let's
and
hear.
This is Taurus from Spirit. And now we will go into Stairway to Heaven. You hear the similarities. Kevin, you're giving me a look like, no, it's not that. It's similar.
It's in the same vein, but it's not instantly like, if you heard that, you wouldn't immediately say, well, that's Stairway to Heaven.
A little of it, I am hearing Stairway to Heaven.
It's definitely similar. There's no doubt about it, but it's, you know, it's music, all in the, you know, the Western scale. I mean, there's only so much you can do.
I know. And that's coming from a musician. Let's hear Stairway to Heaven.
Now, this doesn't sound like Stairway to Heaven to me either.
Does this sound like Freebird?
A little bit more like Freebird.
Wait, let this play just for a second. We'll go back to Taurus. I wish I would have kept playing the flute because I could have
done this.
Oh, that would
have been beautiful.
All right, now you have them together where they're comparing and contrasting on their own. Because I heard a little of... There were a few riffs of Stairway that I heard in Taurus.
Yeah.
Not the full thing.
Right, but it's definitely close. But I don't know if it was stolen, do you think?
I think they followed the same chord progression. Or a very similar one.
And it's the same tempo. There's more of a misty feel to Taurus. Do you get that? Do you know what I mean by that?
No.
You can almost hear when you hear it. If Kevin plays it again,
more wizard like.
It's more wizard like, a wizard like mist where dragons could come out at any moment.
Yeah, there's some sort of synthesizer or something going on in the background.
Yeah.
There.
All right, let's hear someone did them in and out of each other.
This is one. Yeah, I made it where it's.
Oh, you did this.
Taurus fades into Stairway.
Okay, let me hear this. This is Taurus. Then it changes.
Right. Here's that mist I'm talking about.
I see the smoke.
You hear that? Mist.
It's very similar. Come on.
It is. Yeah, it's... Yeah, that almost sounds like it could be one song almost, doesn't it? I don't know. Are you going Stolen? Or are you going to go Influenced? What are you going to say?
I agree with Kevin. There, you know, as the mother of a songwriter, he has played...
Bobby Darin.
Michael has written three songs that he's played out, which, by the way, he's playing at the House of Blues on Father's Day at 6:30. Mm. And he, when Michael played his songs that he wrote, in my head, I'm hearing, that sounds a little like such and such.
Yeah.
But...
Like the Lambada?
No. No, but I think a lot of songs have been written where it's hard to, like, you can be inspired by something
right.
where you're not stealing a riff, but a feel,
right.
maybe,
right,
more than a riff. Because I hear similarities, but I'm not buying that Jimmy Page ripped that off.
Can I call attention to a discovery you and I made where Bob Marley ripped off the Banana Splits? That's a perfect example. And I know that sounds like a joke, but it's not. Bob Marley, the great Bob Marley, stole from Flegal, Drooper, Bingo, and Snorky, and he knows it.
He does know it, and we got some confirmation from Ziggy Marley when we spoke to him. I have these old shows in my crawl space somewhere. I have to find them because we talked to Ziggy Marley when we worked at the Loop.
Right.
And if you take Buffalo Soldier, oi, 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 and then we play...
One banana, two banana, three banana, four.
Oh, no, not that part.
I may have added that part.
And then we played the Banana Splits theme.
Right.
And it was pretty similar.
Eerily similar.
And we asked Ziggy if he, you know, did you ever watch the Banana Splits while, you know, you were under the care of your dad? Was he ever in the room? And he laughed, giggled a little bit more and said, yeah, I did watch it.
Because the Banana Splits theme came before Buffalo Soldier by a year or two. So all the pieces are there.
Paul Winchell should be suing the estate of Bob Marley.
I know.
But I don't know. Jim has a comment on this, and then we only have a second here. Hi, Jim. What do you think about the Taurus Stairway controversy?
Hey, Bill and Wendy. Last night on the news, they were talking about the same thing, and they even went back to either the 1500s or the 1700s. There was a concerto by a composer, and they said it was a pretty popular one at the time, and it was the same 12 notes. I think they played like harpsichord or something. It sounded like the exact same thing.
Wow. How about that?
So I think it's more influenced by than stolen. I mean, there's so many guys who wrote music that are similar to other songs. You know, you listen to them, you say, hey, that sounds like this or that sounds like that. You know, what can you do?
Led Zeppelin has stolen a lot of old blues tunes that they give credit to. So if they're stealing something, they're going to admit to
guess.
It.
I guess.
Well, no, and all the old English guys, the English bands, the early English bands, look at how influenced they were by all the American blues, the Southern blues guys.
Mississippi you blues. Know? Yeah, you're right.
There's something to that. Right.
Thank you, Jim, for that little tidbit, because I want to know why Randy California, not his real name, is all of a sudden suing. You know, I guess this has been going on for
all
a little
these years
bit.
Later,
but
though.
Still.
Why wouldn't she
I'd
do
like
it?
I'd like to find out who he owes money to.
Good point. Thank you, Jim.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Yesterday at about this time, we were talking about the tragedy in Orlando, Florida, where the gator attacked that young boy, 2 years old, toddler. We didn't know his name. We didn't know if he would be found.
Right.
And then when we got off the air, the story had some conclusion, not a happy one. But we go live to Disney World in Orlando right now to ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Yeah, and in fact, they did find the body about 16 hours after the child was attacked by an alligator in a lagoon behind the Grand Floridian Resort. The family issued a statement today saying they're heartbroken at the loss of the little boy. Little Lane Graves and his sister and his parents were all at Disney World for a little vacation.
I had read that they had arrived on Sunday and...
from Nebraska.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just being a parent it's the most horrific thing in the world. Yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about the no swimming sign, and I just got back from Disney. I just got back 3 days ago, and I was shocked to know that there were alligators out there. And people have said, you know, it's Florida. What would you think? Well, I would think if it's movie night at a resort and there's a little beachfront there, I wouldn't think for a minute with just a no swimming sign that that meant alligators in the water.
Right. And now Disney says it's looking at the wording and the placement of the signs around the lagoons. There are nine of them, I think, spread across all the Walt Disney World properties in Central Florida. But remarkably, and I think it's remarkable, I'm shocked that this hasn't happened before, considering the place has been open 45 years. Millions of people have visited there, and you have to assume that thousands and thousands of alligators live around there. In that water, there's really just no way to control where the alligators are. They're indigenous to this area. They can go from one watering area, one pond, or one little lagoon into another one just by walking across and getting into it. So there's really no way to keep them out. Disney does have a program to mitigate them. They go out and essentially hunt for them, I suppose, with the blessing of the Wildlife Department, and take out as many as they can to protect the visitors.
Jim, they had said yesterday that Disney's policy was to find the alligators that were in excess of 4 feet, and they would relocate those. But, I mean, I'm no alligator expert, but I would even think that an alligator, even at 4 feet, would be pretty menacing to a small child anywhere near anything, wouldn't you?
Yeah, sure. And the estimate on the size of the one that attacked little Lane Graves, it was 4 feet to 7 feet there, which is a pretty wide range.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the what they're looking at. So at a minimum, it would have been that minimum length that Disney would be looking for.
Oh, go on, Wendy.
No, I was just going to say, and I'm sure everybody's heard this by now, but the boy's body was found intact. Apparently, I know an autopsy is going to be performed. It appears that the little boy drowned and was not eaten by the alligator, but it was found very close to shore, wasn't it?
It was, and fairly close to where the attack happened, within 15 yards or so. You know, and despite the thorough search that fire department, the sheriff's deputies, and wildlife officials did, the body was relatively close to where the yard vanished.
Now, Disney opted to close the beaches at the resorts yesterday, especially during the search for this little boy, but they decided to keep the theme parks open. And Wendy and I were debating the merits of that yesterday. What do you think the thought process was there, Jim?
Well, I think they tried to scale their response to the actual threat that was out there. I mean, closing down all of the whole complex of parks would be a little extreme. I mean, after all, at the amusement parks, the theme parks themselves, there's no danger whatsoever if you're not near water. They did decide to keep all the resorts open. They closed for a time the ferry that operates on that rather substantial man-made lake where the boy disappeared. It is back running today, but the beaches are still closed.
I just kept, and we had mentioned this during the show yesterday, the way that Disney World is situated, you were more than likely while riding, I know the ferries were closed, but the monorail system would have taken passengers right past that search site, and how menacing is that? You know what's going on, and you see it firsthand, and then you're going to the happiest place on earth. It's very hard to pull that off.
Yeah, and they've got some PR to handle here. I mean, it couldn't have happened at a worse time for Disney. They are opening Disney Shanghai today. So at the same time that this whole nightmare was happening here in Florida, they're celebrating the opening of a new park. And, you know, you're right. It's kind of a mismatch.
I had read yesterday Robert Iger, who's the president of Disney, was actually in Shanghai for the opening and decided to fly back, that it was more important to be here in Orlando during all this.
Yeah. He wants to have his hand on the tiller as this whole thing is going on, and kind of direct the PR efforts, certainly. They've only put out a couple of statements, the most recent just an hour ago, saying that they are going to review the signs and their policies and protocols to try to prevent this from happening.
I watched the press conference when this boy went missing, because after getting an alert that the story was happening, and Sheriff Jerry Demings has done a wonderful job, and he had mentioned that when the body was found, it was the hardest thing he had to tell the parents. He knows they are Catholic, so he brought a Catholic priest with. And I just thought he handled things as best he could under the terrible situation.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, what else he could have done. I think that he knew very early on that this was going to be a recovery effort. It wasn't a rescue of a kid who might be alive. It was a matter of
very carefully and very discreetly searching for and recovering the body of a little boy whose parents were absolutely distraught. You know, they were sitting right there when this all happened. They jumped in. The father actually tried to wrestle the alligator to get the boy out of its jaws. The mother was running up and down the beach to try to get help. And so they were no stranger. It's not as though they were being negligent at all. In fact, there are people at their church back in Elkhorn, Nebraska, say that they're very careful, very doting on their son and their daughter, who's 2 years older than he was. So, it's a hard thing. And by the way, the sheriff says that he does not expect to see any sort of criminal charges or negligence complaint filed against the parents.
Who would have thought that for a minute? I would think there's going to be some complaint against Disney, knowing full well that there were alligators on the premises and yet no warning signs when other resorts down the way had signs saying be on alert for possible alligators.
It could be. There may be some civil action against Disney filed by the family or somebody else. We'll have to see.
Did the search take so long, Jim? Because when you think for a minute that this alligator snatched a boy, that it either swallowed him or went farther, because it took so long and then the boy's body was found right basically where it happened, just a few yards away.
Yeah, I have to assume that that's the case, that they figured he's gone. There are these water bodies, these lagoons and little ponds and lakes are connected by canals that run through the park to keep the water flowing, keep it fresh, and keep it regenerating itself. So I think you're right that the searchers thought, well, it could be anything where this lake is huge. I don't know if you've seen this thing. It's a man-made lake, but it's quite substantial.
Seven Seas Lagoon.
And so I think that their thought process was that it was a long way off, and yet it appears at least that the alligator simply let go of the boy almost right after he grabbed him, or it grabbed him.
Jim, I don't know if you saw this, but on social media yesterday there were several people who posted either pictures or videos on Disney property where they said, hey, I was there 3 years ago, I was there 6 months ago, here's a picture I took. Nobody believed me, but I saw an alligator. I mean, all of a sudden, you're seeing a bunch of these pictures.
Yeah, and it's not unheard of at all, because alligators are indigenous to Central Florida, and a lot of bodies of water there on the Disney property, so it's not unexpected that you would find alligators there.
I wouldn't expect it in a million years.
But how could you prevent it? They were here first.
By the way,
when we build all these parks, they're not going anywhere. They're still out there in the waterways and in the lakes and ponds. They're quite common around here. They're common all across the Gulf Coast.
I would have imagined that there was some fencing or something that would protect the visitors. And that's really my question about Disney. Are they talking about updating these signs a little bit?
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, the statement they came out with about an hour ago said that they're reviewing the signs, the placement, and the wording and the protocols around these lagoons and these waterways to try to make sure this doesn't happen again. But again, not only is it rare for it to happen at Disney World, it had never happened at
Disney.
Jim, one of the more interesting things I read yesterday, and I don't know how much time you spent down in Florida, but they said that people who live in Florida year-round understand the dangers of alligators and coexisting with them, but a family from Nebraska would really have no concept of how fast and dangerous they are, and that's true.
Sure. I think you're right, and they might not have realized just how dangerous it was out there. I live in Texas, and I wouldn't let my kids anywhere around a body of water like that.
Yeah.
But then maybe they should rethink the movie night on that little beachy area as well, like perhaps inside in a theater or something, because really you're under the illusion that, oh, look, it's family movie night. We're all sitting here by the water. Honest to God, I'm born and bred here in Illinois, and I wouldn't have thought for a minute that my kid could get snatched by an alligator.
Yeah, I think they'll look at all sorts of different things to try to broaden this out, to try to protect people and try to ensure it doesn't happen again. I mean, they make their bread and butter on providing an experience for families, a positive experience, and it's expensive to come to Disney World.
And they've done a great job. I mean, they really have. I feel sorry for the whole situation, and certainly for little Lane Graves, little 2-year-old boy.
Yeah, terrible.
A devastating day. Jim, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Jim. It's Jim Ryan, ABC News correspondent, stationed right now in Orlando, Florida at Disney World, where the unthinkable happened.
It really did.
It's, you know, I kept looking at pictures last night and remembering all the times, as I've told you, we've stayed there at the Grand Floridian. I've walked on that beach. I've been in that water. I've seen those signs that say no swimming. And I say, well, I swam right over there. It's just a few yards away. I can swim here too. You know, it's not, what difference does it make if I'm swimming 10 yards away over there or here?
I'm thinking at this point it's negligence. And if I can share with everyone, a custodian who worked at the Grand Floridian has some comments that were told to the Orlando Sentinel. Can we take a break and come back?
Absolutely. More ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Again, we have learned Lane Graves, the little victim, 2-year-old toddler who was taken by an alligator in Disney, and you've seen his pictures everywhere. He's the cutest little
kid. I tear up every time I see this kid's picture. Every single time.
The Orlando Sentinel, of course, the local paper there, has been doing tons of stories on this. And the question was raised the headline is Alligators a Frequent Sight at Disney World. And there was a custodian who worked at the Grand Floridian, Mike Hamilton. He was so concerned by alligators occasionally swimming up close to the shore of Walt Disney World's Seven Seas Lagoon that he said he warned managers that they should actually fence off the area.
Yeah.
Now, this is a custodian. He's going around cleaning the place. There are signs that say no swimming, he says, but no signs that say gators and everything else in this lake. Alligators have been commonly sighted at Walt Disney World, prompting both fascination and fear in surprised tourists. And other tourists have reported alarming experiences with Disney alligators, especially at the Seven Seas Lagoon.
Somebody on Facebook posted this yesterday. It's a quick video. It's like 5 or 6 seconds long. It's one of the stands. You know the way the monorail is on these kind of giant
supports,
concrete supports. So you see the base of it, and you see an alligator swimming around there. And they said nobody believed that I saw an alligator at Disney World until I got this video footage of it. I don't know when it's from. But
I am shocked. Am I that naive? I know I'm pretty naive about things. I'm not a great traveler, but I'm at Disney. I'm not expecting there to be man-eating alligators.
I can't say shocked. I'm shocked at what happened. I'm shocked that a 2-year-old kid got carried off by one. But then you think that's kind of what they do. You know, they're looking. We still don't know exactly what went down. You keep hearing it was just mating season and it's feeding time at 9 o'clock, and you hear all those little statistics. But being there, you are lulled into a feeling of safety, whether it's legitimate safety or just perceived safety. When you're on Disney property, you're so used to seeing everything. You know, you're on the Jungle Cruise and you go, I'm in danger, but not really. I'm on Space Mountain.
Exactly.
I'm flying through space, but not really. So you're conditioned to believe that. But then when something like this happens, you go, oh, man, there's a dose of reality I was not expecting. I can't say I'm shocked, but
I am shocked.
Oh, yeah.
When another part of this article in the Orlando Sentinel, and go ahead and look it up yourself, some interesting facts, according to this newspaper, San Diego attorney David Hyden told the Orlando Sentinel on Wednesday that last year he whisked his son to safety at Disney's Coronado Springs after a gator approached the boy playing in calf deep water. Then Hyden saw a second gator nearby, and he said a hotel manager called one of them, oh, it's our resident pet.
Oh.
And seemed unconcerned. Hyden is saying, if I hadn't gone down there in another 2 seconds, my kid would have been killed. Alfred Smith of Charleston, South Carolina, said he alerted a Grand Floridian employee Tuesday night after seeing a gator in the lagoon. He thinks, although how would you know, it's the same one that attacked the boy less than an hour later. And this Alfred Smith guy says, I did warn another family of three that had small kids too close to the water, and they, along with another family, took their children and left.
I think that's the right thing to do if you see something like that, is those two steps. Tell the people who are working at the hotel, just so you know, there's an alligator, and tell anybody with little kids, stay away from the water.
Yeah, but like Alfred Smith, who saw an alligator Tuesday night before Lane Graves was snatched up.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that he alerted any employees, but he told some other family, hey, I just saw a gator.
Careful.
Again, I know I'm whining about the signs, but how about There were some other people complaining that a lot of the guests at Disney feed the alligators, and that has made them a little domesticated in a sense where they're not afraid of people, and they're coming up going, hey, give me some food. How about a sign that says, do not feed the alligators? Because then that would tell me, oh, my God, there are alligators here?
And that's a calm way of saying be on lookout because they're in the area. Right. I know they don't want to be too alarming, but at the same time, when it's life and death like that, I guess you have to be a little more deliberate, don't you?
In my opinion, yes. Yeah. I don't know. Terrible tragedy, and I'm just heartbroken that that kid was found so close to where he was attacked, because I'm sure the mother and father thought, that gator has just taken my kid and swum away, and that's why the search probably took so long. They're trying to track down. They killed five gators to find out if their boy was inside.
Right.
And the gator dropped the baby fairly close to...
Yeah, almost the same place.
Really sad.
Yeah, awful. We'll take a break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have coming up for you next. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.